Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
For years in this industry, whenever an African-American character, hero or villain, was introduced, usually by white artists and writers, they got slapped with racist names that singled them out as Negroes. The black man's no longer going to play the minstrel in the medium of comics and sci-fi fantasy. We keeping it real. And we gonna get respect by any means necessary.
Ah, come on. That's a bunch of horse s***. And no, Calrissian was a black guy, you know. He got to fly the Millennium Falcon. What's the matter with you?
Who said that?
I did. Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fantasy.
Lando Calrissian, Uncle Tom. Only some white boy gotta invoke the Holy Trilogy. Bust this. Those movies are about how the white man keeps the brother man down. Even in a galaxy far, far away. Check this shit. You got Cracker Farm Boy Luke Skywalker, Nazi poster boy, blonde hair, blue eyes. And then you got Darth Vader, the blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Shut the fuck up. Now, Vader, he's a spiritual brother, you know, down with the Force and all that good shit. Then there's Cracker Skywalker. Gets his hands on a lightsaber, and the boy decides he's gonna run the universe. Gets a whole clan of whites together. And they gonna bust up Vader's hood, the Death Star. Now what the f*** do you call that?
Intergalactic Civil War?
Gentrification! They gonna drive out the black element to make the galaxy quote unquote safe for white folks.
And Jedi's the most insulting installment.
Because Vader's beautiful black visage is sullied when he pulls off his mask to reveal a feeble, crusty old white man. They trying to tell us that deep inside, we all wants to be white.
Well, isn't that true?
Afternoon to ye. It is 22 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of July in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. I am he. Draw near and whatnot. It is the Rick Emerson radio program from high above the milk packing district in the beautiful heart of our fair city here in southeast Portland, Oregon. If you'd like to join the program today, and why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you indeed, my chums, my friends, my fellow travelers on the road of comedy and amusement? It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. That is our telephone number. If you'd like to be part of today's program via the telephone. It's also something you can email into, that there program of ours that we're doing right now here. This, that. That is this. I am he. This is that. And now is then. Goo goo gajoo. Anyway, it's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. And Dawn at RickEmerson.com is the other email address for your emailing at pleasure. If you'd like to chat, you can do that as well. That's at RickEmerson.com. God damn it. Just sounds like there's endless ways to get a hold of us. And there are. Don't get me wrong about that. It's not like that's incorrect in some fashion. It is entirely correct.
There's the Facebook, the Twitter.
It's just, do people still use the MySpace? Is that a thing that the kids are still doing? They're not MySpace.
Oh, God, no.
But, you know, here's the thing. Here's what will happen. I'm going to make a little prediction now. This little thing you can write down. You can take this to the bank, as they used to say. We should actually start a story. We should just create one of those fake, like, You know, one of those media scare stories where they try to convince you that your kids are getting a bunch of hum jobs in a back room because he was wearing jelly bracelets or whatever, yeah. You know? We should start creating a media scare story right now, and the story will be this. The story will be the kids... You could almost see... I don't know, what's the name of some useless journalist on television?
Wolf Blitzer.
I don't say that about Wolf Blitzer. What a terrible thing for you to say. You go, just, go sit in the corner, Don Taylor.
That's just the first thing that came to mind.
Well, fine, whatever.
I could be wrong.
There you go, the speaking Dennis Miller doll in the corner says... We ought to start some television scare story, such as they do with with any number of other things. I think we've had that biting story sitting in the archives forever that we've never actually gotten to. But it was where Kira Phillips on CNN said that because of Twilight, bite me used to be an insult, but now it's a term of endearment as children are sinking their teeth into one another to prove their love, which is a thing that's like happening nowhere. But. We should start some rumor that kids are all migrating back to MySpace so that their parents can't spy on them because parents have forgotten about MySpace. The parents are all over on Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook is sort of the diversionary prom. Meanwhile, the kids are all over at the real prom, which is happening on MySpace. So that's that'll be the thing we start saying is true now. All right. There you go. Anyway. It is 503-505-6964. I'd like to thank Thomas Gill, and I mean that sincerely, because a couple days in a row now we've gotten sort of a late start because we go to, you know, we have the, on the live stream, we have the best of shows that are playing, and then there's a little musical interlude, and then what happens is it'll be best of show, then the musical interlude, then I bring it down, then there's like 30 seconds of silence, and then we start. And today, the 30 seconds of silence was more, I don't know, it seemed like an excruciating eternity, but it was, you know, a couple minutes or whatever. And then Thomas says to Don via the text box, he might just want to unplug everything and then plug it back in. And me, oh, come on, what kind of solution is that? And then, of course, I unplug everything, plug it back in. And in fact, I did it twice. It's working like butter. So there you go. So, kids, the guy at tech support is usually lying to you, but not in this instance. And by the guy, I don't mean Thomas specifically. I'm just saying tech support in general, because they usually deal with morons. And it's usually some guy that's taken his brand new netbook and he's put it through the dishwasher. And then he wants to know why it's not really working properly. But when the nice man at tech support... no matter what his accent may be, tells you just to unplug everything and then jam everything back together because it might work. You might want to give that a go. I'm just saying. All right. Here's what's coming up today. We have a corpse watch on the way today. Religious nutcase watch coming up as well. And today we'll do the top five. Don't forget, later, if you are listening to this program live right now on Tuesday the 27th, we're going to do a special evening taping of the show as well, or afternoon anyway. It's going to be later on, a few hours from now. Tuesday afternoon / early evening, we're going to do a special taping of this program, which will play back Wednesday, because that's what my leverage taping turned out to be. There's a little bit of confusion there as well. Fortunately, it wasn't on my end. I guess the deal with the leverage thing is that it's a two-part season finale. And they're filming both parts at once. So, like in Gresham, they're filming part one. And then, like, I don't know, Milwaukee somewhere, they're filming part two. So there's a little bit of confusion about where I was supposed to be and when. But so I'm filming Leverage tomorrow. Doesn't mean it's going to make it onto the broadcast. I've already prepped everybody for the fact that it might just be a whole lot of nothing. They might skip right over my scene and go right to, you know, something more interesting. But so we're going to be taping a special version of the Rick Emerson Show this evening, Tuesday evening, for playback tomorrow, Wednesday during the afternoon. But you'll be able to listen to that taping live tonight via the live stream. We'll put a little Twitter alert when we're getting ready to do that. Before we go anything, but before Don says anything about the news that's coming up, before we talk about what we did last night, or you know what sort of activities filled the last 20 hours since we spoke, I have to tell you this. And I have Dawn to thank for this. We have for you today. I almost want to put out like a special announcement just for this. I almost want to get on all the different social media and just let everybody know about this. I have, courtesy of Dawn, sort of the greatest piece of audio you have ever heard in your life. It's that girl with Tourette's.
Oh yeah.
So somebody, and I was going to say somebody, but it was Dawn. Came to work yesterday, and she said, "You know, there's this thing that I heard on the radio that's hilarious, but I don't think I can make fun of it because it makes me sound like a bad person." And I immediately said, "I don't care what it is, I'll make fun of it. Like that is a propeller that I will walk right into. I don't care." Because here's the thing: it's not even like I really am a bad person. I mean, you know, it's like I'm no Pol Pot or anything. But But it's just I realize that there's a bit of a perceptual problem there, that sometimes people believe me to be a crude and amoral type. And so, you know, but that works for me in some ways, because it means I can just do whatever. And the people go, well, what do you expect? It's him. He's a terrible person through and through. So Dawn came in yesterday and she said, I heard the funniest thing, but we can't really talk about it. And I certainly can't make fun of it because it makes me a bad person. And I said,
I don't care what it is, Dawn.
I don't care.
It's gold.
I don't give an F. Tell me what it is. And Dawn says, how did you phrase it? You said, I heard a girl with Tourette's being interviewed. And I was like, sold. I don't even care what it was. But it was on OPB, right? Is that the deal?
Yeah, it's Think Out Loud, which is I don't know if that's is that a local show?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's on OPB. Think Out Loud, which is one of the most boring shows.
Is it like a community access, like a community affairs show?
Yeah, and it's always, they always have two or three people, and then you can call in, and it's always people talking about, like, how valuable bike lanes are. You know, and how important it is to recycle. And
I have a community garden growing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so in this case, it was all about the anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act and how we still have to make more strides towards access and
figurative strides in some cases.
And this woman who is an activist, she sounds pretty normal other than being kind of hyperactive when she talks. But when she's not actually speaking, apparently her Tourette's, one of the ways it exhibits itself, is she makes these bizarre random noises. And one of the noises she makes sounds like a small dog barking. And so there would be these, yeah. So I don't want to spoil it by doing my imitation.
Oh, no. Go, you feel free, because here's the thing is your imitation, don't get me wrong, I'm sure it's probably funny. There's some comedy value there. But
it doesn't do it justice.
It just pales.
Next, I'm listening to this, and they got the guy, and they're talking about, you know, the dignity of people with it. And this is important because at some point not long ago, retardation wasn't even considered a disability. And in the background, you hear this woman going,
And
I'm trying so hard. I'm laughing in my car and then feeling terrible because I'm laughing at the woman with the Tourette's.
And the thing is, like, as prepared as I was for it, even having heard your description of this woman with Tourette's being interviewed on this OPB show, where, of course, the guy, because they're humorless jackasses, because the guy is, of course, not allowed to laugh, you know, the host, and you could hear him actually trying to keep it together.
He's completely unnerved by this and yet keeps talking as if nothing is going on.
And that's the thing is, like, you just can't do that. I mean, I'm not saying that, let's just be very clear. I'm not saying if somebody's got some ailment or they got some mental problem going on, which Tourette's I think is. And that's another thing that you're probably not supposed to refer to Tourette's as a mental problem, but let's be honest, your brain isn't supposed to work that way. That's a thing that really ought not be happening when you speak. So it's a problem. But if one cannot laugh at the vast parade of amusements in this life and the many thousands, if not millions of shades of difference, the infinite variety with which Allah has blessed us, then really, what's the point? And also, if you're going to have a girl with Tourette's on the radio, you got to know that that's going to happen, that as you're preparing to introduce her, she's going to be in the background. Just sounding like a rock tumbler. Just make it. And so the guy is just struggling mightily to keep it together. And to his credit, he succeeds for the most part. Even knowing, though, what it sounded like, hearing it this morning as I was editing it down was just fantastic. It was just the most glorious thing. So we'll play that here in just a second. I'm not even going to make people wait. I am going to send out one other Twitter announcement here in just a second. Don Taylor, what news stories are we tracking on this fine Tuesday?
Well, we have a swimmer who drowned while diving into the Sandy River. Two sisters who were simultaneously struck by lightning. And a man who was killed in a paper rolling machine accident.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he sort of? Was this like a Temple of Doom kind of a thing where it caught his sash and just dragged him in?
Something like that, yes.
Excellent. I mean, you know, it's not excellent, but I mean, really, if you got to go, that's an interesting way to.
Yeah. That's all you can really ask, I think, is that it's, you know,
that your death be interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to get the Tourette's thing all ready to go over here because it's just glorious. But I really am going to send out one final announcement about that. Let's see. And there you go. Later on, we'll do today's top five. We actually had a two-part top five. By which I mean I'm going to do a top five today, and then the next show which will we're actually going to tape this evening, but it airs tomorrow, is going to be Dawn's variation on the same list. And this is going to be what it's our top, the top five live performances we have seen. Is that
yes.
it?
Yes.
Top five live concerts? All right. So top five live shows musically that we have seen. I'll do my take on that list this show, and then the next show, Dawn will do her assessment of that same topic. So that's all coming up. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. While I'm getting this ready, let's pay a visit to the news desk. This is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Portland man swimming in the Sandy River drowned Monday night after diving into the water. Ramiro Francisco Diego, 21, didn't resurface after going into the water near Oxbow Park. Multnomah County deputies and paramedics showed up to look for him around 6:30 p.m. About 20 minutes later, his body was found 150 yards downstream from the Oxbow Park boat ramp. We called the police, said Judy Tail, who helped find the body. We found him, and we jump in there, grab the kid, and throw him over the shoulder and bring him to shore. Gresham firefighters and paramedics tried to revive him after pulling his body from the river, but they were unable to do so. When I picked him up, he was lifeless, Tail said. It was kind of scary. The good thing is we found the kid today. Her definition of good
is kind of odd. Some different take on that word that I wasn't previously familiar with.
The man was pronounced dead at the scene. Deputies said Francisco Diego's family described him as a good swimmer, and it's not believed that alcohol was a factor in the drowning. His family recently returned from flying his father's body back to Guatemala. They said Francisco Diego will now join him there. He lost his father 2 months ago from cancer, said his uncle.
All right, I'm describing this now. The greatest piece of audio ever. Let's see. Coming up in mere minutes. Up in mere minutes. On the Rick Emerson Show. All right. Live at rickemerson.com. All right. Seriously, if people miss this, they have only themselves to blame. All right. Let's see. You did the right thing by bringing me this audio as well. This is it is a flower that you realized you could not cultivate, so you brought it to the appropriate gardener. We are all going to be richer for it. Okay, greatest piece of audio ever, coming up in mere minutes, blah, 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 rickemerson.com. All right, tweet. Yes, bam, done. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Sisters Stephanie Boyce and her sister Mary had an accident in Milwaukee, Wisconsin on Thursday. They were walking home from a nearby sandwich shop when they were struck by lightning.
Both of them at once or separate bolts of lightning?
Both of them at once.
Were they holding hands?
I don't know. That I don't know.
It seems like the lightning had to have... I mean, I don't really know how lightning works. Is it where it just like arcs out or something? Or is... I wonder how that even... I guess if you're standing right next to each other... You think a bolt of lightning as being sort of discrete, by which I mean that they are clearly defined and they're sort of narrow, but maybe not. I mean, I guess sometimes it can be sort of a broad-ranging arc of electricity.
Well, I'm going to tempt fate here and attempt to play some audio. This is going to work.
Here's why this is funny. If you weren't listening to Legion of News last hour, first of all, shame! Shame! Last hour during Legion of News, which is similar, I always tell people it's similar to the Rick Emerson Show, but a little bit different in the sense that it's not quite as freeform. It is not quite as wide ranging. We try to color inside the lines. Exercise just a modicum of self-control during Legion of News as opposed to this program when we come right out of the gate by talking about Tourette's. We try to keep a little bit of a lid on some of the more inane aspects of our broadcast during Legion of News. That, though, just completely went out the window today because Dawn's computer went insane and began playing multiple sound files at once, and then the iTunes application just couldn't even be turned off. It just kept playing regardless of what you did. And so at one point there was like a lounge version of Iron Man playing underneath one of the one of your news stories, which was glorious. Have no doubt about that. All right. So I'm potting up your computer right now.
All right.
All right. So this is the lightning,
the lightning story.
All
right. Well, actually, this is a neighbor, and he is describing what he saw.
All right.
I was sitting there and it just said, pow, just, you know what I'm saying, just a big old pow, and I could see the streaker light, and I jumped on the floor, kind of playing, you know, and then I just started hearing them hollering. They say, I heard a lot of commotion. I come to the front door, and they was laying right here.
It was a big old pow.
Yeah.
A pow.
Just a big old pow.
A big old pow. Awesome. Can we hear that one more time?
Sure.
Do you have that? All right. Here's, once again, that guy.
I was sitting there, and it just said, pow, just, you know what I'm saying, just a big old pow, and I could see the streaker light, and I jumped on the floor, kind of playing, you know, and then I just started hearing them hollering. They say, I heard a lot of commotion. I come to the front door, and they was laying right here.
Okay. Well, yes. There you go. Fantastic.
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
Here's Don Taylor.
Another neighbor who is also a witness, named King Bussy, said, we came out here, we cast a blanket on top of them to keep them from getting wet, and we just all laid hands on them and prayed for them. We just prayed until they got here and asked us to move them out of the way. But when they got here, speaking, I guess, of the emergency crews, I have to give them credit. When they got here, they took care of their business.
Okay.
Because that's the thing. While the gentleman prayed, another man called 911.
I was just going to say, which of those do you suppose actually had the more demonstrable effect?
Stephanie Boyce says she will wait until her sister Mary gets out of the hospital to tell the whole story. I don't know how much more there could be.
I think it's really a two-stage thing. Walking down the street, lightning hits you. Bam, the end.
A big old pow.
Yeah, it's...
Right now, she just wants to thank everybody. We're both doing okay. We're strong. Our hearts are big, and we send all our love back and blessings back to everybody who has given them to us. As far as Stephanie's concerned, a miracle happened on South 25th Street last Thursday. And for anyone who doesn't believe it, she's asking, how many people do you know who got struck by lightning and lived to tell about it?
You know, as,
oh, and her sister's condition is still critical.
And as dumb as the whole we're just going to lay our hands on and pray thing typically is, it's even more absurd when you're talking about somebody being hit by lightning, which is by definition a thing that God created. I mean, in her worldview, that is something that came directly from, it literally came from the heavens in her world. It came from the great up there where God resides.
I had a coworker who was a super duper hardcore fundamentalist Bible studying Christian. And she told me the story about how inspired she was by this guy she knew who had been in this horrible, horrible fire and had like his whole face burned off. And his high school sweetheart still married him anyway, even though he was just a big melted, molten pink mess. And just how awesome it is that he has. And it's just, and that this was a testament to the wonders of God, that all of these really good, because the community came together and helped them build a house and gave them things and helped them, and that this is a testament how great God is. And all I could think to say to her was, I said, but isn't it also a testament to what a bastard God is that he lit the guy on fire?
Yes. Well,
how come only the good things are the God things and the bad things are just random happenstance?
Well, here's my thing is that if I, you know, and I make no claim about the existence or non-existence of God. I will say this, that if God exists, he's almost certainly psychotic. I mean, that's, you know, or there's just sort of, it's, or if it's like a dueling God kind of thing. I mean, maybe it's just sort of a multi-theistic sort of join up there. And it just happens, you know, it's just about who's running the place, you know? Like if, you know, the regular God's on vacation and bastard God comes and takes over. Or if it's like a Morning Sam, Morning Ralph sort of a deal. You know, and they're just, you know, and it's like God number one lights you on fire and God number two says, oh, for the love of, hold on, you know, puts him out and finds him a wife to make up for it.
Well, if you're interested, I have another story here that actually kind of ties into what we're talking about. And this was the other audio I didn't get to play before. There was this really interesting piece I saw on Nightline in their Having Faith or Faith Matters or right. All About Faith or whatever it's called. And they had a reporter go to the annual convention of the American Atheists. And there's this fellow there named Edwin Kagan, who is this very famous, very super, you know, well-known atheist guy. And he was doing this thing where he had a blow dryer that they had put something on the side that said, you know, reason and truth, it said on the side of the blow dryer. And they did like an anti-baptism, a de-baptism.
Oh, yeah,
ceremony.
No, I saw that. Somebody sent that around, yeah.
So, yeah, so that was just that was all really kind of silly. But the guy himself is, this is audio from the interview with him, and here's them talking about him, about Edwin Kagan.
So they're discussing the guy,
yeah.
Discussing the atheist guy. All right.
Well, wait, let's start this over.
You have called Mary Magdalene a, quote, deranged hooker.
I have.
You've had fellow female atheists dress up in burkas and perform a song.
I have. Back in their burkas again.
And then there's his nickname for the Holy Eucharist.
The Holy Eucharist is swallow the leader. That's pretty bad, isn't it?
I think some people would think that's offensive. Would, yes.
So, okay. Yeah.
So well, there you go. There's the rarefied comedy of that guy.
I do enjoy when, like with what you're about to play here, when the news guys are tasked with just like, well, yes, that.
So who is the guy that we were just hearing from? I mean, is Edwin
Kagan? He is the national legal director of the American Atheist Convention, Atheist Association, or whatever it is.
Here's the thing: can I just speak for the vast majority of America here when I say that, not unlike, let's say, deranged faith healers and Fred Phelps, you know, really. Militant atheists just bug me because they're a-holes. They're just such bastards.
Well, it's exactly the other side of the same, like, crazy obsessive coin.
I mean, that's the thing. It's, you know, whatever. Be an atheist, be a theist. It doesn't really matter to me. You know, I got TV to watch. So it is, as you said, they are polar twins in that it's people who wake up every morning and their first thought. The difference between atheists and in this case, for example, let's say hardcore Christians, is just a matter of degrees because they're both obsessed with God all day long, every day. They're both obsessed with religion. And they're just such humorless dicks.
Well, here, let me play this and tell me if this doesn't sound like exactly the same sort of. Poor us, we're such victims stance that many hardcore Christians take. Except in this case, he's talking about atheists. Let's see.
Atheists have no chance whatsoever of prevailing in a direct confrontation with believers. There are far too many of them. I've called this phenomenon the American religious civil war.
Yeah, it's...
Right. During the trial...
No, I don't... There's this overweening self of... Of self-importance, you know, that...
Well, and more to the point, it's like, you know, just life is short. You gotta find a way to just not be like a joyless, embittered dick all the time.
But if you're turning your lack of religious belief into, in a sense, a religion of its own,
right.
Then you're not really coming out ahead,
seriously,
are you?
Seriously, don't you have like an Ayn Rand autobiography you could be reading somewhere? You have a Frank Zappa record collection you could be adding to. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It is 503-505-6966. And by the way, to the atheist guy, FYI, when he refers to Mary Magdalene as being a deranged hooker, that is someone who has contempt prior to investigation, as alcoholics would say, because the Bible does not, in fact, refer to Mary Magdalene as a prostitute, like, ever. It is, in fact, not said. So that is a guy who is dismissing something that he, in fact, has no understanding of. So that guy can suck one, is what he can do. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Before we do anything else, so I got to get to this this Tourette's audio, which is really just... I'm only going to give just the tiniest little thumbnail sketch of a setup here, and then we'll plunge on in. So this is from an OPB program called Think Out Loud. Yes, that's the name of this.
Yes.
And so this is a community affairs program, which they broadcast from our fair city of Portland, Oregon. And it is about, whatever's going on in the community or whatever is happening nationally or internationally that affects people in our city. And this was about the 20th, 25th anniversary of the American Disabilities
Act.
Whatever
the anniversary was, yeah.
And so he's... The guy, the host whose name escapes me, is getting ready to interview a woman who has Tourette's. And I will just, I'll kind of let the audio just sort of speak for itself here. So without further ado, this is, by the way, courtesy of Dawn Taylor.
We are back talking today about the disability rights on the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Dave Miller. Emily Harris is away to join the conversation with your experience or your questions. You can go to our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. We're joined now by...
See, I won't keep starting at stopping this, but you wonder if he had met her before and if he really had any understanding of the Tourette's thing before he began the interview or if he just had sort of a theoretical understanding.
And I heard this, and of course they haven't actually introduced her yet.
No.
So I was listening to this and I was thinking... My first thought was, is there a puppy in the studio? And then there was like, is someone adjusting like a squeaky chair? What is that sound? And it took a little bit because she started talking and eventually she reveals that that's part of her Tourette's is this noise. And I was like, oh. And then after that, it was funny. I just couldn't stop laughing.
You're right, though, when you talk about the squeaky chair, that really is the sound that she's making. All right. So that's a...
We are back talking today about the disability rights on the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Dave Miller. Emily Harris is away. To join the conversation with your experience or your questions, you can go to our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. We're joined now by Emily Holmes, who works for the Oregon Youth Authority. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Now, you live with a number of different mental disabilities. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what they are?
Yes. I have, well, first off, Tourette's syndrome.
That's fantastic. The fact that it was almost like it was almost in reply to his question. Let's just hear that one.
A number of different mental disabilities. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what they are?
Yes.
Also, if you could just hang a feeder somewhere in the studio, that'd be great. Maybe a bag of seed.
I have, first off, Tourette's syndrome. And it's interesting because technically, yes, it is a mental disability, but I consider it a physical disability because it's controlled by my brain, but it affects me physically. So I make random noises and movements that I can't control. I also have obsessive compulsive disorder, ADHD, short-term memory dysfunction, and processing disorder, which has to do with how my brain takes in and understands information and how...
Are we sure that this is a real person and not like a Courtney Hameister character or something? I mean, I'm just speculating. I could be. All right.
And how my brain sort of gives me the information to explain to other people, to communicate to other people.
When did the subject of your disabilities come up when you were applying for your current job?
So I was in my second interview for the job.
It's astounding to me that this hasn't been worked into a sitcom somewhere, that there hasn't been some post-Arrested Development television program created in which she's a recurring character.
And this is me listening to this in my car, driving and giggling and then thinking, oh, God, I'm going to hell.
But then knowing you had to
person.
Share it with
but
me.
But then immediately sharing it with you the minute I get into the studio.
No, seriously. Because let me just say, if I had found out that this you knew of this audio and hadn't shared it with me, that would have severed our friendship forever. If I knew that you had heard this and had not told me about it, that would have been the end of the road for you, sister. I wonder if she wants to be an intern on a radio program, because that really is the, show of hands, huh? Huh? Come on. All right, let's continue with... So she's talking about applying for a job. Ah! Wow. I just started that. I apologize. If it makes you feel better, everybody, I'm being deafened along with you because they've got her sitting in front of a microphone, and you can tell at the beginning of the interview she was way in the back of the studio, and as the interview continues, she's getting closer and closer to the mic, and the processing, you know, microphone processing is, you know, good, but it's not really able to stop this peaking.
Regarding the her as an intern,
yeah.
I just get Cheryl in the text box with just one word, no.
Oh, come on. Where's your sense of humor?
Applying for your current job.
Why does Cheryl hate people with disabilities? That's what I want to know.
All right. So I was in my second interview for the job. And Mom, I had some tics at the beginning of the interview, and I just.
But fortunately, those all smoothed themselves out. Hello, Don. How are you doing over there?
I'm fine. Oh God. Oh, you should not be laughing at this. This is wrong.
You know,
so wrong.
You know, Don. It's part of life's. It's part of life's rich pageant. It is one of the many threads in the human tapestry. If God did not want us to find things amusing, he would not have given us the gift of laughter.
Explained, I have Tourette's, it's no big deal, and everything was fine. Then at the end of the interview, they asked me if there was anything that I would like to tell them, anything else I wanted to tell them.
Is there anything you'd like to squeal or chatter at us in a strange high-pitched register? Now's the time.
And I said, I said, this is going to surprise you, but I wanted to let them know that I had obsessive compulsive disorder.
She's just like you, Don. You guys have a lot in common. Maybe you could have a whole sister's night where you get
this
together.
This may surprise you, but I've got something wrong with me.
You could do each other's hair and make cawing noises.
And the reason is because I think filing is fun. I enjoy
Well, who can disagree with that?
I love to organize things. I like taking a big mess and cleaning it up. I just think that's a lot of fun, and I think that that is what sold them on hiring me.
Have you had conversations about accommodations, about changing the work environment in some way at your current job?
I want to know where she works. And this is not me asking you to stalk her. I'm saying in a figurative, we don't stalk the bearded lady, we don't stalk the Tourette's girl. But I'm saying, what kind of a job? I mean,
she said she's with someone, and I imagine that whatever organization she's with.
That was a little instant karma right there. That's what that is when you having your involuntary explosive sounds over there. That's
I'm dying.
This is like that Twilight Zone where Vic Morrow's a racist and then he turns black. All right. More than any event.
Then he gets his head cut off by a helicopter.
Then he's decapitated. I mean, they can't, like, you can't have her deal with the public, obviously. That's a thing you can't, that's a thing you can't do. You
can't, yeah, but she may be with a nonprofit, and if she's with a nonprofit, they may be much more accommodating of her disability.
I would say they would almost have to be a nonprofit, even if unintentionally so. You know, here's the thing. I would just so desperately long to have a company with a customer service department so I can put her down there to deal with obnoxious customers. You want to talk about a way to get customers to just leave you the F alone? You put that girl down there, you know? Some guy tries to return his toaster, he's going to take that toaster and go back home.
We could hire her as a call screener.
Oh, I'm... You're being punished like Job.
Oh, God. I breathed in something I shouldn't have breathed in or something.
I have a couple of... One, I have a tape recorder that, because of the short-term memory dysfunction and the processing disorder...
Why am I holding this tape recorder?
When I take meeting minutes, it can be very challenging, although taking meeting minutes I know is challenging for anybody. So I have the tape recorder so I can listen back. I'd say that really I don't have any, like, accommodations at work, as in maybe a special type of software on my computer, that kind of thing. I'd say the biggest thing is just making sure that people understand what's going on and, you know, saying, hey, you know what, this is how Emily communicates sometimes. You know, you may have to wait a little bit longer for her to...
I sense a children's book in the offing. How Emily Communicates.
She may need to take some extra time to think about what she's trying to say before she actually explains it. You know, this is what the funny noises are. You don't need to call an ambulance or anything. Although a couple weeks ago I was having a really bad day, and at one point they did start to call an ambulance. And I was like, don't do that. It's not going to help or anything. But I'd say just people's attitudes toward it, and just making sure that people just understand what's going on.
So is it like a stuttering thing? Is that the deal?
Well, she says she also has physical movements too. So, and a lot of people with Tourette's flail.
So it's like a jerking back and forth sort of a deal.
And their hands just kind of fly off into various directions.
Let's just hear the opening one more time here. This is once again.
We are back talking today about the disability rights on the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Dave Miller. Emily Harris is away.
I wonder if she was doing that since, like from the minute they brought her in, or if it's a thing, again, like stuttering that is sort of a, like it's brought on by anxiety or nervousness or just, and here's another thing I wonder. If you got Tourette's, I really do honestly wonder this. If you have Tourette's, I wonder if that's a thing that like you're doing while you sleep, you know? Like people talk in their sleep, so clearly your body's able to do that. You're able to make those noises.
I don't think I could make some of those noises even if I tried.
Did you just say that people with Tourette's, quote, their hands fly off, end quote? Somebody's asking about that in the text box here.
Well, I was going to fly off in different directions.
Oh, I see. Okay.
When they're flailing.
That would be a problem.
No, I don't think their hands actually fly off. That would be a different kind of disability.
To join
entirely.
The conversation with your experience or your questions, you can go to our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. We're joined now by Emily Holmes, who works for the Oregon Youth Authority. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Now, you live with a number of different mental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what they are?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Hey, by the way, this is the difference between nonprofit radio and like this show, is that you know what precedes? This is an hour-long program. I was just sifting through all of this, trying to get to the Tourette's girl, and is just skipping along, and it's a whole. And I understand that probably not every episode of this guy's show is like this, but the first segment was he's talking to some guy who's in a chair, you know, some guy with no legs or whatever. And then it was four segments. She's the final segment because you go out with your, you know, you end with that. That's your Stairway to Heaven. The second segment was a conversation with a guy who. I don't know what the particular nature of his disorder was, but it was one of those guys who has the slow, gurgly voice that you can't really understand. And that's where you just know that time is just moving. It's like a metric slowness for the guy who's doing the show. And where he's just thinking about all of the various things he could have pursued in his life other than working at a nonprofit radio station, where he is talking to a guy who sounds like he is speaking to you from underneath 3 feet of mud. And then that is followed up by the Tourette's girl. And just to have had a webcam or something, just some eye into the studio as this interview was taking place.
Or just to be able to chat with him after it was over and everyone left.
First off, Tourette syndrome. And it's interesting because technically, yes, it is a mental disability, but I consider it a physical disability because it's controlled by my brain, but it affects me physically. So I make random noises and movements that I can't control. I also have obsessive compulsive disorder, ADHD, short-term memory dysfunction, and processing disorder, which has to do with how my brain
it's like an Easter basket
of crazy information and how.
See, because now I'm like the guy. Now listening back to it, it's like I'm like the guy where you have like a PTSD thing where you're clenching and bracing at every moment, like waiting for the next sort of explosion of noise to come out.
Brain sort of gives me the information to explain to other people, to communicate to other people.
When did the subject of your disabilities come up when you were applying for your current job?
So I was in my second interview for the job. And
good Lord.
Mom.
I mean, it's like a John Philip Sousa orchestra of explosive utterances.
Yeah, this entire conversation is why, by the way, I was disinvited from KBOO. This is just another example of why I got booted off of liberal talk radio.
Well, you can't just pretend that it's not happening, though, right? I mean, like that's the deal. Like you can't just sort of turn a blind eye and go, "Well, there's nothing to see here, folks. Move along." That is clearly not the case. All right. And
I know that there are many, many people who would listen to something like that and they think, that poor woman, what she has to deal with, and find no humor in it. The thing is,
humor in it.
That is no one I know. That is no one that I actually spend any time with on a regular basis.
No. And I would almost guarantee you, man, I don't know because I don't know her, but I would almost guarantee you that the person who lives with that, if you get to a certain age in your life and you're just sitting there making, like crow noises randomly, that's probably a thing that you yourself must learn to see the humor in.
Well, because, she went to college and she said that when she went to college, she'd go to like brand new classes and before the first lecture or whatever, she would talk to her teacher about it and she would stand up and she would tell everyone in the class, "I have Tourette's and I make these weird noises and stuff happens and this is what's going on. So don't be alarmed if you hear something that sounds like a small dog barking."
So the thing about Tourette's is, my deal is because sometimes, like, there was like a Phil Donahue episode or something years ago where they were talking to somebody who had Tourette's, and they had to bleep a lot of it because a lot of what the guy would just sort of eject verbally would be profane. And so my thing is it just some, like, weird, like, your brain is on shuffle kind of a deal where it's grabbing random sound files out of the bottom of your head and just throwing them out of your mouth?
I guess something. I don't know. One of the she even talked about this in the show, though. One of the identifying features of Tourette's is that it changes. So the noises and the words and sort of thing actually change over time. So if you have a certain kind of Tourette's, she's making these noises and doing these things right now, you know, 6 months from now, she could be making completely different noises.
She could just be speaking in Czech or mooing or something?
Who knows? Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Have we gone to the news desk already? We haven't yet, have we?
Not really.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, at the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor on your... Oh, I'm sorry. On your Tuesday.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A gas station clerk was pistol-whipped during a robbery, and it was all caught on camera. A surveillance camera set up at Space Age Fuel in Gresham captured video of the struggle. Police said the robber hit the employee several times with what appeared to be a BB gun on Friday night. Anyone with information that may help investigators capture the subject are urged to call the Gresham Police.
By the way, I would like to apologize to the several members of the audience who have messaged me in the text box saying that they do in fact believe this is really the best kind of karma. They do, in fact, believe that they may lose control of their bladder retention. By the way, you should know that I'm going to wet myself sitting here at my desk. Laughing should not be painful. Thank you. All right. And so forth. He was pistol-whipped with a BB gun?
Yeah.
That's got to be emasculating. I mean, at least if you were pistol-whipped by a guy holding a Beretta or something, it's like you can just say, well, and then the guy pistol-whipped me. It was all... And here I am today to tell you the story. Pistol-whipped with a BB gun is just... That's just embarrassing.
That's a little sad.
That's like when you hear about one of those guys that gets...
That's Gresham.
One of those guys who gets shot, and then they ask him where he goes, and he got shot in the buttocks, you know? And being shot in the ass is nothing that makes you sound manly. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
An employee of a New Hampshire paper company was killed after he was pulled through a paper roller machine on Monday morning. Leo P. Gagnier, 34, of Enfield, New Hampshire, was found under the machine at APC Paper Company. On arrival, firefighters determined the worker was not in the machine, but had somehow gone through the machine, said Claremont Fire Chief Peter Chase. Emergency officials responded to the accident at 8:49 a.m. and provided life support at the scene and on the way to the hospital. Gagnier was pronounced dead at 10:08 a.m.
Do you suppose?
At Valley Regional Hospital.
Really?
Fire officials said the man was found by a co-worker. It appears no other employees witnessed the accident.
How would you even recognize the guy if he went through a paper... Was it a paper folding, rolling?
Paper roller, rolling machine.
So is that the... is a dumb question, but is that the thing where the paper is... created and then it goes on the huge rolls.
Right. Then goes through a thing, I guess, to get cut into sheets or whatever. But
oh, god damn. I mean, you got to wonder at what stage in the machine, because that's got to be more than one machine. That's got to be multiple machines that are all hooked together on like a conveyor belt.
Making things even worse, he was a temp.
I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yeah.
Oh,
he
god
was also
damn
due to get married next month and the father of two children.
And his tour of duty was up in just 3 days, plus his retirement from the force was tomorrow. God damn. There's some sort of black and white and red all over joke to be made here, but I just, it seems like that would just be piling on at this point. All right, paper.
I barely knew her.
Okay. So there you go. There's that guy. A paper pulping or milling or pressing or folding or spindling plant is not a place where you should die. We'll add that to the... Where was the other place that a guy shouldn't die? Was it last hour? Was it the guy at the fish hatchery?
Yeah.
It was like in a sturgeon pond or something. That's not where you want people to find your body.
And last week there were the five people who died in the salsa plant or wherever it was, in the tomato vats.
People who fell into that fecal pit in Kenya. And it's just no good. Here's my thing about the guy in the paper rolling machine. First of all, I don't even know how you would spot... that was whoever it was. In other words, the coworker could identify him unless it was some sort of a badge he was wearing something.
Yeah, he had one of those shirts with the...
Hi, I'm unlucky. And, you know, because that's just a whole Flat Stanley thing going on there.
Yeah.
And this was the paper folding plant or processing machine at where? Was that here in Portland?
No, this was in New Hampshire.
Okay, so it wasn't like at one of our local milleries.
No.
All right. So there you go.
But it could have been.
That's right.
We have many paper mills here in the Portland
area.
Well,
it probably has happened. I mean, that's one of those things that they have. That's why there's such a huge, in Idaho, for example, that's one of the reasons there's such a huge meth problem there, is because you get these guys who work in, and there's a big timber industry in Idaho, just as there is in Oregon, and you get these guys who work at the lumber mill, and the most dangerous job at the lumber mill is this, I don't know if they still have it or if it's done the same way, but it's this job called pulling green chain. And that's the worst job you can possibly, and that's the job they give to the new guy or the guy that maybe they don't like all that much. Maybe a guy who wears too much cologne. You know, you put Phil over on the green chain job. And the green chain job is that there are these things at the paper, at the lumber mill that basically are just gigantic wood chippers, like the kind that you use when you're trimming tree branches or something. But it's like where you put an entire log in, an entire tree goes in. And I don't mean like a tree, like from your backyard. I mean, a tree like from like the, like a forest tree. And the deal is that it's just sort of brought in and it comes down this big kind of a conveyor belt sort of a thing, one at a time. But then you've got to guide it into the chipper. And the chipper, insanely enough, I don't know why you would ever build something this way. This seems like one of those things like where they're like building the flat iron, you know, building in New York and then realizing later that you've put no bathrooms in it. It's just, you know, but it's just, you know, but it's just too expensive to start over again. And it's already there. So you just work around it. Because the actual mouth, the intake opening for this gigantic chipper is, in fact, below where you stand. So like a guy has to stand above it. And then as the logs come down, they have a chain around them, and he has to hold this chain, which is in fact green, and he has to guide the log into the mouth of the chipper. And, you know, and probably once about every 18 months or so, there'll be some guy. There was a guy who, when I lived near Idaho, a guy who was out one night partaking in adult beverage enjoyment, and the next day just, you know, was not looking and 1 foot too many in the wrong direction, and then poof, right in. There's another guy he fell into some diabetic coma, and it's like, hey, take that guy out in a Smucker's jar. So it's a bad place to work.
Is the Skype turned on?
I believe it is, yes. Right. Why, is somebody messaging
somebody
me?
Somebody was hoping to call and apparently couldn't.
Well, let me see. Let me double check, actually. I am almost positive that is turned on because I'm getting messages via the Skype. Anyway, so that's one of the big reasons that they have such a huge meth problem there, because, you know, if you work with a guy, you know, that he gets sucked in and just liquefied at the other end, you're going to do whatever it takes to kind of stay awake at that point. So in any event, well, what I'll do is I'll close this and reopen it. And the Skype does appear to be on, but okay. I'll actually close it and I will launch it again. And we'll kind of we'll take it from there. In any event, coming up later on in the program, by the way, we have a corpse watch on the way, religious nutcase watch, and Dawn will be doing her pop culture authority here in just a bit.
No, you're. Oh, yes, I am.
That's going to be happening here in just a while. So
what?
They'll be preparing that script at some point. All right, and don't forget later on this afternoon. This is a Tuesday evening, it's Tuesday afternoon as I speak these words to you. But later on today, the afternoon this evening, we are going to be pre-taping a show that's going to be played back on Wednesday. So that'll be airing later on this evening. So do be listening for that, if you would. At the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I would like to say really briefly, though, it occurs to me that if, you know, a guy did go through a giant pulp mill or a wood chipping machine, it would make a horrible mess.
Yes. No,
there would need to be cleaned up.
By another temp, by the way.
By maybe a professional cleaner of some sort.
Really? Is this really how you want me to handle this?
Well, I was just noticing that it is now
is this really
2:16,
how you...
and...
Are you saying that I'm not going to find time between now and the end of the program to find a different opportunity during which we might fit in a mention of Michael Beatty, proprietor of the cleaning solution?
Bruce has mentioned several times that I should make sure that you read the spots, and so I'm...
So much the better if it's in association with the inadvertent demise of a temp worker at a paper pulping plant in New Hampshire. All right. Michael Beatty is the proprietor of the cleaning solution. He can be reached at 971. We'll make this the billboard. 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. We'll be talking more about him later on in the hour. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
The Utah Supreme Court has reversed Warren Steed Jeff's 2 convictions on charges of rape as an accomplice and ordered a new trial, saying that instructions given to jurors were erroneous. Jeffs is the prophet, so-called, of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or FLDS. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive terms of 5 years to life after he was convicted in September of 2007, accused of using his religious influence over his followers to coerce a 14-year-old girl into marrying her 19-year-old cousin against her will.
Wait, so it wasn't even marrying him. It was marrying the cousin.
Right.
Because we talked about this during Legion of News, and I guess it's hard to keep track, to be honest, of all the violations and the pedophilia and whatnot. It just seems to run rampant. So I figured it was just to marry him because that's the way this always works. You know, he's some feeble, crusty guy who needs like an endless procession of prepubescent girls to come share his bed because that's how Jesus wants it. But this is actually, he was just using it to actually get her to hook up with his cousin.
Yeah, his 19-year-old cousin. She was 14. The cousin was 19.
I mean, this is how you know that these guys, and this is how you know that this is not even really just about religion. I mean, it's so tempting just to pin this all on being a person of faith. But it really, you know, and that aids and abets this, but it's not even really that. Because if you're a 19-year-old guy and you just, like, you got it in your head that somehow you want to be getting it on with a 14-year-old or younger, as often happens, I mean, that just means there's just a whole lot going wrong in your brain at that point. You know what I mean?
If you're 19 and you're doing this, you have grown up in a sick, sick culture to begin with that has a sick attitude towards the role of women and a sick attitude towards the role of male in the family. And, you know, of course, yeah.
I mean,
it's just a messed up dynamic in every possible sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's something else going on there because I don't know a lot of, like, I don't know a lot of 17, 18, 19-year-old guys who go, yeah, I got to get me a 14-year-old. That's where the hot action is. It just doesn't, you know, this is not the way that you would typically think. So it's just like escalating layers of crazy going on in this family.
Well, the 14-year-old girl, Alyssa Wall, testified that she repeatedly told Jeffs that she did not want to be married, that she was uncomfortable with the sexual advances from her husband. And Jeff's advised her to pray and submit to her husband, to learn to love him, to bear his children, or risk losing her eternal salvation.
Yeah.
So here is Gary Tuchman of CNN explaining now why the Utah Supreme Court has reversed his convictions.
All right. So this is talking about the conviction.
During the trial, which we sat in, Warren Jeff's attorneys argued with the judge, saying that in jury instructions, the jury must be told that Warren Jeffs knew that unwanted sex would take place when he performed a marriage between a girl, her name is Alyssa Wall, and her former husband, Alan Steed. So the attorneys for Warren Jeffs said the jury explicitly had to be told that. Now, the prosecutor said the jury is not stupid. They know that if Warren Jeffs presided over the marriage, that he would know that sex would take place. Nevertheless, the Utah Supreme Court, with regret, says they realize that this may not be justice for the girl, but they say under the rule of the law, there should have been explicit instructions to the jury, and therefore the conviction is dropped. Therefore, he's entitled to a new trial.
Now, and that just sounds like one of those things where because it wasn't the jury that found him, that acquitted him. In other words, the jury found him guilty, but this was that the defense attorney found some instruction they should have given that and didn't.
Yeah.
All right. So this wasn't some weird nutcase jury nullification thing where they just decided that they didn't agree with the law and then let the guy walk.
No.
He was convicted and now he's been acquitted. So do they get to try him again? It seems like there's probably multiple violations of somebody going on here. It doesn't seem like it could be all that hard. This strikes me as being like one of those faith healing families where, like, how difficult could it be to find some other instance of their nutcasery on which to try the guy?
Well, Jeff's weasel defense attorney, Wally Bugden said, "We're thrilled. We're overjoyed. We're ecstatic that the Supreme Court agreed with us. The state just had the wrong legal theory. Jeffs is an unpopular religious figure in our state," Bugden said, "and the media have had a field day portraying him as an evil, horrible, pernicious individual." The defense has always maintained that marrying someone, encouraging them to make their marriage work and, quote, be fruitful and multiply, that is not the same thing as saying to a husband, "I'm encouraging you to rape your wife."
By the way, Wally Bugden sounds like some character that Rodney Dangerfield would have portrayed in a movie like in the late 80s or early 90s or something. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk. And then here's what's coming up in the show, by the way. Still to come, we have a corpse watch. We have today's top five. The top five today is going to be the top five live concert events witnessed by me, Rick Emerson. And then later on this evening, we will be pre-taping a show to be played back on Wednesday. And Don will do a similar top five there as well. Plus, it's already Tuesday, so we're like a day behind, but we got to get this done today. We got to recap Mad Men.
That we do.
From Sunday. Because unlike True Blood, which, as I said yesterday, I was watching, and then at one point I just sort of quit watching it, but I'm not really sure why. I just realized the next day that I'd never actually finished it, and I'm not really clear on at what point I just opted out of Sunday's True Blood. But all I know is there's like 20 minutes left, and I never
finished
it.
Your eyes just glazed over, and you just went blank.
Well,
it was like I
got up to go get something out of the fridge or whatever, I think, or I went up to use the bathroom, and then just plumb forgot to turn the show back on because there was just nothing at all compelling about it. It was just the only thing I remember from that episode, it was Lafayette and the guy in the front of the car, and they were making out and having some protracted discussion about whether or not they were going to have a lot of gay sex. And I don't think that's the reason I turned it off, because, I mean, really, let's be honest, you could just throw a dart at that show and you'll land on that same conversation happening between any number of characters like every 5 or 6 minutes. So, in any event, here is Dawn Taylor.
The quick thinking of three teenagers helped save a boy's life in a swimming hole in the small town of Sheridan, Oregon. Lane Davis and his two friends, Noah Disapatino and Noah Martinez, both his friends were named Noah, have been swimming in the Yamhill River for more than a decade, but the waters turned into a dangerous spot when another teenager began to struggle in the water. He took a breath and all the water then went back down. That's when I'm like, it's getting serious, Disapatino said. While they were swimming, someone alerted them of the swimmer in distress. Initially, they said they weren't sure what to make of the situation, but they took action as the boys struggled to stay afloat. The boys used their experiences gained from the Boy Scouts. Noah Disapatino kept the boy's head above water while his friends performed CPR. He was just laying there and barely breathing, barely having a pulse, said Davis, who is a member of the fire department's Explorer program. His face was all white and lips were blue and his eyes were in the back of his head.
Wait a minute. So is the kid dead?
No.
Okay. So he did, but he did pull through.
They saved his life.
Okay. Because that's one of those that's one of those stories where, you know, you're listening to it and talking about them doing CPR and all. Like, CPR never works in these stories. CPR is one of those things that I think, I'm not saying this is the case, because obviously they were able to save the kid and resuscitate him or whatever, but CPR almost seems like one of those things that they teach you to do, but that's just because they don't want you, the innocent bystander, to panic, and so they've decided to give you something to occupy yourself. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, it's like, my wife's having a baby, boil some water or whatever, which is, you know, for no real reason, it seems. It's, you know, it's just a sort of thing to keep you busy so you're not in there, like, screwing with the doctor. And CPR just seems like, because they're never really clear on how you should do it either. You're either supposed to not break the ribs or you're supposed to be breaking the ribs, because that's how you know you do it right. And now there's that thing with CPR where, isn't it now that you're not even supposed to compress their chest? Haven't they changed it?
I don't know.
Where, like, you're supposed to breathe.
If anyone is dying around me, they're just doomed. I have no clue. I'll just stand there and go, eek! And they call 911.
Really, you might as well just lay the hands on, because there's really not going to be any discernible difference,
you know,
there.
I know that if somebody falls down and, like, hits their head or something, don't move them. That's pretty much all I know.
Well, there's the two aspects to CPR. There's the compression of the chest, and then there's the blowing into their mouth to you're giving them the breath of life. But there's, one of those things, and I forget which one it is, they now say that, like, you're not even, like, don't bother with it. And I realize that, by definition, I then have a 50-50 chance of saving somebody, because I can't remember which one actually does more harm than good. Here's another thing I don't really know.
Oh, I know how to do the Heimlich, but I've never done it.
I was just going to say, I have no idea how to do the Heimlich maneuver, because they don't make an amusingly named doll on which you can rehearse that either. There's no, like, Henrietta Heimlich.
Easy. You just you put your hands together like this so that you're making, like, a really strong fist thing. You have your hands around the person, and you get them right here, right under the diaphragm.
Right.
And then you just yank back as hard as you can.
Well, I mean, like, I've seen the demonstrations, the sign in the restaurant, you know, where they showed, like, the two stick figures Heimlich-ing or whatever. But that's not the same. That's one of those things that I will forget as soon as I have to do it. And have you ever done this? Have you ever been, and I know you have you ever been at a restaurant table and you, in fact, yourself, you start to choke a little bit and you realize with absolute certainty, no one at this table knows how to do the Heimlich.
Yeah.
And the time sort of draws out. And you realize that it is just solely up to you and your esophagus whether or not it's going to eject the chicken nugget.
Well, you can do the Heimlich on yourself, by the way.
Isn't that where you throw yourself into the edge of a table
something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I like that there's actually an international sign for I'm choking and I need help that everyone's supposed to know. And I can't remember. It's either putting both your hands like this at your throat or, like, pointing at your open mouth. Either way, it's sort of like, considering you're probably sitting there turning a weird shade of purple and going, you know, people would probably be able to figure it out, I would think.
And back on the Heimlich for just 1 second here. First of all, I'd like to know if there's anybody who's ever actually had to do that, like in real life, has ever really actually had to perform the Heimlich. Because that's, unlike CPR, the Heimlich makes a lot of linear sense. In other words, it's just, you know, it's just using the compression of your diaphragm to force air out to pop the thing out like a cork. I mean, I get that. The thing about having to do the Heimlich on yourself, though, is that you can't possibly test that without, like, you know, like splintering your ribs. There's just no way. Yeah. It's not like you know, like.
Well, you'd have to jam something down your throat and get it lodged first. So you'd have to deliberately choke yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's not
and
like.
And then hope this would work.
Yeah, like in grade school, they could just be jamming cauliflower into your throat and then having you throw yourself at the table. That's going to end poorly.
They should, though.
That's the thing that they're
really.
That'd
be like the best PTA meeting ever.
There really ought to be a Heimlich doll that they have, as opposed to a CPR doll. Because the CPR doll, it seems like that's stuff you can practice whether or not somebody is actually undergoing that condition. So I don't know why they do that. All right. Well, let's do one more here, and then we will take a break. Do we, and by we, I mean you, do you have the copy for your Pop Culture Authority? Do you feel comfortable doing that into this next segment?
I do indeed.
All right. So I'll tell you what, we'll do one more. We will roll today's Pop Culture Authority. What is today's Pop Culture Authority going to answer, Dawn Taylor?
What's the funniest letter of the alphabet?
So today we'll talk about the funniest letter of the alphabet. That'll be part of your Pop Culture Authority. We'll also recap Mad Men from Sunday, and we'll do today's top five. Don't forget, later this afternoon, we're going to be doing a special advance taping of Wednesday's Rick Emerson radio program. This is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our Corpse Watch.
All right. Here is your Corpse Watch right here for Tuesday. Maybe I should tie Michael Beatty, the cleaning solution, to this.
It doesn't really work for this one.
Okay. Here's your Corpse Watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your Corpse Watch for Tuesday.
U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill says there's a problem with the misplacement of hundreds and possibly thousands of buried military personnel at Arlington National Cemetery. McCaskill says fixing the mismanagement that has caused the problem at Arlington Cemetery will be easy. The challenge lies in the more emotional questions. How we deal with the heartbreak of trying to figure out who is where and trying to right that mistake for the families of these heroes, that, I think, is going to be a much thornier question, she said, and one that I think will have to be done in consultation with the families and with the leadership of the Army.
What does she mean when she says they're misburied, mislabeled?
Well,
mis-
a report released last month indicates hundreds of remains have been misplaced due to human error and mismanagement. But McCaskill says the report only focused on one portion of the cemetery. In reality, thousands of remains have likely been misplaced.
But I mean, when they say misplaced, not that you necessarily even know the answer to this, but that could mean any number of things. Misplaced could mean like
buried in the wrong grave.
See, that's my thing. Is it like, or is it, well, they're supposed to be buried here. Well, there's just a, well, this is where they're supposed to, well, there's nothing here. Well, I wonder where his body is. Or if it's like the names got swapped around, or if it's like five guys in one hole or something because they ran out of room or whatever. You know, which is, you know, that's, look, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you were talking about garbage the other day, about landfills and so forth, and how we're running out of room. You know what, while we're running out of room, it's not landfills, it's cemeteries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the, I can't even imagine how many square acres in this country we have taken up by just sticking guys in the ground, as opposed to cremation, or even, and I know that this sounds horrible to people, but when you, like, or even just like a stacking, huh? How about just, you know. You just do it like ice cube tray style, you know, where they're made to fit into one another.
Or you have your loved ones dehydrated like people do with their cats and dogs sometimes.
Do they have their cats and dogs dehydrated?
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen that?
No. What do you mean?
You take the pet to
I know what dehydration is, but I mean, what would be the point?
They dehydrate it, and then they stuff it full of something to flump it back out again.
Oh, it's preserved.
And
oh,
it's
like
preserved.
Stuffed and preserved.
Yeah, and then they give it back to you, and they put, like, glass eyes in it or something like that, and they give it back to you, and posed in a certain position, and now you have, you know, Mr. Mittens or Bosco, like, forever.
Bosco. Really? Is your kitten named Bosco? You have a kitten named Borax and one named the Lennon Sisters? Hello, Bosco. All right.
I always thought that would be great if you could do that with people.
You know?
Sit grandpa on the couch. That one woman tried to do that, that 90-year-old woman.
I'm not entirely sure that it's illegal. I mean, as long as they were preserved properly, as long as it was done by somebody who was licensed. There was this great place in San Diego. It moved to Los Angeles, but now it's actually back in L.A. It's called the Museum of Death. And the Museum of Death really is, I mean, despite the sort of, I'm going to say amusing, but it sounds like it. The Museum of Death sounds like one of those things that couldn't possibly be as interesting as the name promises, but I assure you, it's actually way more interesting even than it sounds. It is just fascinating. And they've got everything from, like, they've got they were once used and now they've been retired so that the public might see them and learn, like, execution implements. They've got a whole thing about serial killer art. They got a whole thing about, artifacts from criminal cases. They got a whole thing for, an autopsy section. And, I mean, it's graphic in the sense that they're not pulling any punches, but it is legitimately fascinating. I mean, it's an honest-to-God museum. It's an actual real museum.
Have you ever been to the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia? At the Mutter Museum at the Philadelphia College of Physicians and Surgeons.
Mutter.
Oh, the M-U with an umlaut, T-T.
No.
Mutter.
No,
Oh, yeah. It was the Philadelphia College of Physicians and Surgeons. Back around the turn of the last century, they began, they were teaching facility. And so, of course, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you taught by showing examples of skulls with deformities and weird, skeletons of conjoined twins. And they have all of that stuff. And they actually have a museum where you can go and see a large amount of it on display, including, old surgical instruments. They have a piece of John Wilkes Booth's liver from an autopsy, like in a little jar. They have like one of those people like the Kennewick guy that's all made out of soap just in a big glass case on display. It's the best. I have a coffee table book of a lot of their stuff. I can bring it in and show you.
Awesome. The reason that this whole little side trip was sparked is because you were talking about stuff on the dog. And when you walk into the Museum of Death, I don't know if it's still this way, but you walk in and you buy your ticket or whatever. It's like $12, and absolutely worth it, by the way. If you're in San Diego at some point, there's two things you really got to do, more than two. But, I mean, if you're in San Diego, you got to get a hamburger at a place called Hodad's, and then you got to go to the Museum of Death. But when you walk in, the first thing the guy says is, don't worry about the dog, he's dead. And you go, what? And you look down, and there's a dog that looks for all the world like he's just sleeping. And they've actually stuffed the dog. They've done a really great thing, actually. If you're inclined to keep your pet around once it's shuffled off its mortal hide, that rather than stuffing the dog in some sort of lifelike pose, they just have it looking like it's curled up at the guy's feet, which is sort of sweet, you know? So there you go.
I thought it'd be great to have that done with your cat, only instead of having it be, like, stiff and informed, you get it stuffed with, like, sort of the thing they do the Beanie Babies with or something like that. And
like
then,
a plushie?
Well, yeah, and then you could put it on the couch or something, and someone comes over, and you go, oh, wait, let me move the cat. And you pick it up and just throw it across the room.
Or you could do, they could do like a pipe cleaner wire sort of a thing, and since you could put it in action poses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, with like G.I. Joe kind of movable joints.
It's hard to believe that no one else wants to work with us. My grandfather, and this is how we'll wrap all this up. We can tie all of this up with one horrific bloody red bow. So I thought that my grandfather had a whole Indian skeleton, and then like some other skull that he never identified, it just sat there in his. He called it the utility room. He called it the gun room, actually, because it's where his gun collection was as well. Never locked up, by the way, just sitting around, covering every conceivable table and countertop. My grandfather was effed, now that I think about it. God damn.
That's always interesting when you reach that point in adulthood where you look back at your parents or your grandparents and you go, wait a minute, they were crazy.
He had all of these guns, and then he had an Indian skeleton, some other guy's skull. I've already mentioned that he had Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah.
And then above the it's funny that I'm not even ending with that. Above the Nazi memorabilia, he had like the armband or whatever, which is one of those things, by the way, growing up, I remember showing my friends and not knowing there was anything wrong with it because I'm like 5 or 6 or something. And when you're 5 or 6, you don't really know what a Nazi is. It's a thing you've seen in the movie. It's a thing you've seen in war films or, on the documentaries or whatever we had there instead of the History Channel. And so you just know it's like a cool thing from the war. When you're a kid, like war, is awesome. And I'd be like, and he has one of those Nazi armbands. I remember telling everyone at school. So, I mean, in retrospect, it maybe is not such a mystery that other families didn't want their daughters to date me or their friends to come over to my house. Because, family with skulls and Nazi crap. And then right above the Nazi thing, he had a... He had like this mongoose and a cobra that he had caught and killed somewhere and then stuffed because he was a taxidermist, because that's completes the creepy thing there. And he had them in like the mongoose coat, like the Ricky Tikki Tavi action pose.
I wish I could have met your grandfather.
I don't know that that's true. I know it's true that you wish that. I don't know it's true that it would have been as fun as you might have imagined. He was just the creepiest. But in a way, here's the thing about my grandfather is we might as well just finish this whole thing because Greg and Sarah have already taped, so it doesn't matter if we run a little late. The thing about my grandfather is that let me just finish this corpse watch here. By the way, I'll not be tying any of the discussion of Nazism into Michael Beatty at the Cleaning Solution, just in case he was out there cringing, waiting for the moment where I say blah 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 skulls and Nazis. Michael Beatty, that's not going to happen. Michael Beatty, one of our many fine advertisers, will not be linked to any such things. The thing about my grandfather is, I am glad that I did not know that he was creepy growing up, because some of my grandparents, it was obvious, like from jump, that they were just bastards or just cracked in some way. You know, like my...
Some of your grandparents? Like, how many did you have? I mean, most people have the requisite four.
I had six, because there was divorce and remarriage. Okay. Well, and in fact, we were talking about timber deaths the other day. My maternal grandfather, my mother's father, my maternal grandmother, my dad's, the dad of my mother, he worked in timber here in Portland, my mom's dad, and he got killed by a tree when she was like 3 or something. I mean, he had the kid, he had my mom, and then she was like 3 years old, and he was off, you know, and somebody said timber, and he looked one way, and the tree came from the other way, and dead guy. So there was some of that, and some remarrying and whatever. But I had the four grandparents and then two step-grandparents. But they were all just different degrees of nuts or crazy or evil. I remember my grandfather. This is how God distributes favors, and it is a sort of a satisfying ending. My grandfather was just a racist, just a horrible racist dick. And not in that whole he was a product of his time kind of racism, you know, where like your grandmother might talk about, you know, my grandmother who would I know always when a friend was over, she would say something like, you know, so are there many colored people at your school? And you go, no, grandmother, ixnay, shh, no, ixnay on the other K. You know, no, and that was a thing where, you know, you shouldn't, you know, there's not a thing you say in polite society at this point, but I don't know that she was trying to cause a ruckus about it, as opposed to one of my grandfathers who would constantly, they had some help that would come over, the woman who would come over to help clean their house every now and again. And like every old guy, he would just lose stuff and then think it had been stolen.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, he knew that she stole it because she was Mexican. And then he would follow it up by saying he didn't really hold it against her because it's just in their culture. It's what they, and you know, and even as like a 6-year-old, you go, you know, that's kind of effed, Grandpa. You should, that's crazy. You shouldn't say things like that. But then God just screwed him right back, though, by A, giving him like a long, lingering death, which he had come in anyway for any number of other offenses. Long, lingering, painful death during which he was tended to just by a rotating array of Mexican nurses. So that was satisfying. And I like to think, by the way, I'm not saying that they're bad people. I like to think that they just robbed him blind in the final day. Seriously, that just as he was approaching death, that they weren't even hiding it. That they were just coming in with a basket and just shoving everything on his nightstand into a bag and just taking it home. He had that coming. But I am glad growing up that I did not know any of the horrible things about most of my grandparents, because I got the best of both worlds. I got to sort of enjoy hanging out with them as a kid before I knew that they were evil and awful, and then as an adult, you get the revelations, which at least in some way, it didn't make you feel better as such, but in some way it explains why your whole goddamn family is so cracked. You know, if you go, well, why is everybody I'm related to such a lunatic? When you find out about your grandparents and you go, oh, okay. And so at least it makes some sense, because you know that it didn't start with you. The crazy did not begin, like, in my head. That my family has a long, inglorious history of craziness. So, did I ever tell you about all the homemade porn that my dad found of his parents?
I think you mentioned that briefly. We should save that for another time.
Seriously? Well, good, because I don't really want to talk about it. It was just that's a thing no man should see.
No.
You know, see your grandmother getting it on with some hockey team. You know, it's just, I mean, why would you ever want to see that? You don't. Yeah. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Do you have your pop culture authority?
I do. Right? I do. Right. I have it right here.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. We're going to... Let's talk about Michael Beatty. Let's not. I'm just, I'm only fooling. We're going to roll today's pop culture authority here in just a few. Here's what's on the other side. We'll do today's top five as well. The top five live concerts. Top five live musical extravaganzas witnessed by me, Rick Emerson. We'll talk Mad Men. Try to fit in a watch or two. And then don't forget, maybe not immediately after today's program, but soon after today's program, today being Tuesday, we're going to pre-tape some stuff for Wednesday because I got my leverage taping. And we haven't even really talked about that, about the leverage taping.
So many things.
So much to do, so little time.
We have another show to do later, so we can talk about stuff then, too.
So we'll...
so many things.
So we'll do all that stuff later on, so and whatnot. By the way, the Skype is reset, turned on, et cetera. So the if the phone was having issues before, those have been remedied. It's 503-505-6964. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. The next sound you hear will be that of Pop Culture Authority right here on the Emerson News Network.
What's the funniest letter of the alphabet?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. Professional comedians know that there are a few surefire formulas for getting laughs. The law of threes, for example. Things are just funnier when presented in triplicate. And hard consonants. The letter K is funnier than any other letter. Think of the phrase caramel corn. Now imagine it painted on the side of a food cart at a carnival. They use K's instead of C's, because K is funny. Now tell a joke. A mouse walks into a bar. That's not so funny. But change it up a bit. A duck walks into a bar. Already it's funnier. In Neil Simon's play, The Sunshine Boys, Willie, an old vaudevillian, lectures his nephew about comedy. He says, words with K in them are funny. Casey Stengel, that's a funny name. Robert Taylor is not funny. Cupcake is funny. Tomato is not funny. Cookie is funny. Cucumber is funny. Car keys. Cleveland. Cleveland is funny. Maryland is not funny. Then there's chicken. Chicken is funny. Pickle is funny. Researchers have a number of theories as to why K and hard C sounds amuse us. One idea is that it has something to do with sounds we as babies associated with comfort, like cuddle, cozy, and coochie-coo. Facial recognition experts point out that when we say words with hard K sounds, crackle, carport, whack job, our mouths turned up and out at the corners, the same as when we're smiling. This signals to the listener that we're saying something mirthful. In the sound for K, comedy writers have long asserted that the so-called plosives, called that because they start suddenly or explosively, P, B, D, T, K, and G, are the funniest sounds in the English language. So the next time you're trying to get a laugh, substitute meerkat for weasel and change the location of your anecdote from Baltimore to Kalamazoo. Don Rickles built a career on calling people hockey puck, so there's obviously something to it.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Let your head down, my-
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It's Tuesday. It is 503-505-6964. There you go, from the River album. Bruce Springsteen. Here's what's coming up between now and the end of the show. We got the top five still to get through. So it's a sort of a two-part top five, in that I will do my own take on this list. Then in the program that we're going to tape later on this afternoon, a pre-tape for tomorrow, Dawn will do her take on the list. It's the top five live performances we have witnessed. Top five, effectively the top five concerts we've been to. And that's coming up. Bruce Agler appears to be calling us for some reason.
Huh.
All right. Well, let's see if we can find out what that's all about. Also got a Mad Men recap on the way, and a little bit of news. Let's, hello. Hi, Rick Emerson radio program. How might I help you, Bruce Agler? That's great. Let me just make sure that the microphone is actually functioning. Ooh, wait.
Hello, no. I don't hear you.
I'm sorry. There we go. Wait, and one more time. We'll try that. There we go. Hello.
Actually, I hear you now.
Hi, how are you doing? That was me. I had the microphone potted down. What is up, Bruce Agler?
It's a good thing I didn't do what I was supposed to do and turn my radio down, so I didn't know you were talking.
You're doing that thing again where you're calling us from your iPod Touch or whatever, so it creepily sounds like you're in my head.
Oh, well, good. I like the idea of that. Right. Yeah, yeah. You should announce the Skype name so people can use this if they have Skype. What is it? Rick Emerson Radio, right?
It is, yeah, it's Rick Emerson Radio. No, I'm sorry. No. I take that back. It's Rick Emerson Show.
Rick Emerson Show.
It is,
that's correct.
Rick Emerson Show, and that's, if you go to the website, that's actually in the little contact box there, and I keep meaning to get a separate contact page put up as well, but it's Rick Emerson Show, so you can text us there via Skype or call us via Skype at Rick Emerson Show, or you can use the actual phone number. Those are all posted on the website, yeah.
We love it when you call in with Skype because you sound so hi-fi.
Well, the thing about, yeah, because that's what you're doing right now, right? I mean, it almost sounds like an ISDN connection or something. It really is just amazing.
And this is just my iPod Touch. If I actually had a decent microphone, this is just the stupid headphone that Apple gives you. So
I mean, it really is. It's a world of almost other planetarily designed technology. I mean, it's just astounding.
It's a wonderful modern world, and That's why I was calling in. I wanted to invite more folks to try the mobile stream if they're interested.
Is this a thing that they should be emailing you about? Because I'm looking down and seeing that it's being used by a fair number of folks right now, and we're sort of scaling it up so we don't crash the entire infrastructure.
Exactly. So they need to just send an email if they're interested to tech@rickemerson.com, and that will reach me, or bruce@rickemerson.com. Either one gets me. And depending on how many I get, I won't guarantee I'll send you the invitation if you write to me. But if I don't get too many, then I'll give it to everybody.
So there's a I mean, it just depends. There's a finite number of people who are, you know, able to listen on whatever their work schedule is. Yeah, but we've had some people who said that their biggest thing is they miss being able to take the show with them. Like if they're, you know, a delivery driver, if they're in the car, they're just, you know, walking around during the day. So if you do want to have access to the mobile stream, which we will ostensibly unveil for everybody at some point in the near future. But if you want to be a tester for the mobile stream, you just drop an email to tech@rickemerson.com or bruce@rickemerson.com, and just say that you want to try the mobile stream, and we'll try to get invites to as many people as possible.
Well, it's also really great for those folks who have mobile devices and they're not really clear on how to do it, or their particular mobile device requires tricky software in order to get the archive shows on their device, because since now that we're replaying the show, both shows, over and over again once the live show ends, it means if you're out on your mobile device, you can just hit mobile.rickemerson. You can hit the mobile stream.
Yeah.
And I almost gave it away there.
Well, it's I mean, we've got it passworded right now,
right,
just because we don't want to overtax the bandwidth. But it is just going to, it's the mobile, you know, rickemerson.com site.
Right. And we'll give you a special password so you can be a beta tester. But the cool thing about it is then you can use it anytime and hear the show, because it just plays over and over again once it's over.
Yeah. So once the show wraps every day, what we'll do is, and what we've been doing is, when the Rick Emerson Show gets done, we immediately do an encore of Legion of News, and then we encore the Rick Emerson Show, and then they just sort of play. And then on the weekends, I add in stuff from the archives. But we do, you know, sort of like Howard does with his channel, where, you know, they encore the Stern Show or whatever. So if you're not able to get the archives from where you are, or if you just find that, you know, if you just want like an instant gratification thing, you can do that via the stream. So that is tech@rickemerson.com or bruce@rickemerson.com, and we'll get invites to as many people as possible to be testing the mobile stream before we unveil it publicly.
Can I throw out my two cents on your top five?
Well, is it, I haven't. Wait, is it? Well, would, in other words, is this going to be your own personal top five?
Well, I'm not going to give you five because there's really only one, and it eclipses any other concert I ever saw. So there's no thought of any others.
Is this? Let me. I almost want to guess. Is this a thing? Would I ever guess who this is?
You might.
Don, we must now guess the. All right. Let's see. Solo
Edith
performer.
Edith Piaf.
Solo performer or band?
Band.
In the rock genre, I would imagine.
Yes.
The Beatles at Shea Stadium.
No, I'm not that good, and I'm not that old.
See, you know, when you say that, then whatever he says is going to be anticlimactic now. Let's see. Would this have been pre or post 1975?
Pre
1975.
When I graduated from high school. In fact, I had to miss my high school baccalaureate and got in trouble, even though as a quasi-religious service, that's obviously not supposed to be compulsory. But I had to miss the baccalaureate in order to go.
British or American band?
British.
The Stones.
Yes.
Ah, now see, I got to
wait. Oh, there we go.
Where was it at?
The Stones, the 1972 tour at the Fabulous Forum in Los Angeles.
Excellent.
The infamous tour that they did right after Exile on Main Street came out, and that they made that movie that was shown 2 years later, only in theaters. It's never been on DVD or video, and the movie was in quadraphonic sound. Not regular movie surround sound, but quadraphonic sound. And at each showing of the movie, they had to send a sound engineer to actually engineer the sound in the theater for the audience.
A quadraphonic sound, by the way, is one of those sort of, I would say, a failed experiment, but a thing that they had for like 5 minutes in the 70s, and it was
four speakers.
Well, and it was like they were trying to do like a THX thing. They were like a Lucasfilm sound at that point, and it was four speakers, so it was sort of a forerunner of surround sound. And one of the very few albums ever put out on that, I think Pink Floyd's The Wall was issued as like a Q sound record or something, but then they just kind of they scrapped it, I think, almost immediately after that. I had no idea there was a movie put out in Q sound.
Well, I think Quadrophenia was also out in
I guess that would make sense.
That's why it was named that, I believe.
Yeah, excellent. All right.
But anyway, I think I saw the movie in the theater, but I definitely saw the concert. It was, I tell you, one heck of a time.
See, this is one of those things that I'm just, I'm far too young. All right, there you go. Bruce Agler, executive producer of the Rick Emerson Program. If you want to be hearing the show via the mobile stream, do drop him an email at tech@rickemerson.com. All right, that's Bruce Agler. There you go. You've got a bemused smile on your countenance, Don Taylor.
Do I?
Yes. Yes, you do. Is it a discussion of quadraphonic sound getting you hot? Is that really what it is?
Is
it a huge turn on? Here's talk about that.
Four speakers.
Yeah. Maybe later we'll talk about we can talk about Monster Cable versus Radio Shack RCA cable. All right. Let's do a little bit of news. Then we'll talk Mad Men. Then we'll do the top five. Ladies and gentlefolk, please give her your attention.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A white supremacist group from Idaho that hoped to move to Eastern Oregon has instead moved to the Midwest. Paul Mullett, who said that he's the national director...
Paul Mullett, really?
Yes. Who said he's the national director of the Aryan Nations, said a death in the family, caused the group to temporarily move to Chillicothe, Ohio. He said they're still looking for a permanent home. In February, hundreds of people packed town meetings as they tried to keep the group out of Grant County in Oregon. They knew that these people had every right to come here. We just didn't want them here, said Bob Quinton, the mayor of John Day. When something threatens the way of life out here, everybody pulls together, and that's what you saw.
See, here's the thing is I almost feel the opposite. I feel like you want those guys there because you want to be able to keep an eye on them. You want to know where they are.
I don't want them in my town. I don't want to have to live with them. Especially if you live in a small...
Wouldn't want my sister to marry
especially
one.
Especially if you live in a small town in, like, central Oregon. It's like, really? You want a whole bunch of white supremacists moving there?
I'm not saying... No, see, that's the thing. It's not that I want white supremacists moving there. It's just that, I would prefer to... I'd prefer to be able to just eyeball them, whenever I so choose. Just so I can kind of know what they're up to. I'll put it this way. When I lived in Spokane is near a beautiful city called Coeur d'Alene. And Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is actually a very, very beautiful place, but unfortunately that's not what it's really known for in the Northwest. Coeur d'Alene is known for being the home, at least for a long time, up through the 90s certainly, of members of the American Nazi Party. And so, and plus Aryan Nations guys and just jag-off clan idiots and just rubes of all varieties. Just, you know, it was like Bigotonia. And so every year, like the idiot Idaho Nazis, which are like Illinois Nazis, but not as funny, they would have this parade, you know, a massive show of force in which like five guys, you know, with a flag, you know, a moth-eaten flag would kind of march down the middle of Coeur d'Alene. And it was always sort of great in that you'd look and, you know, because there's this whole, you know, there'd be this big build of the might of the Idaho Nazi Party will be. And then it's just like five guys that could not possibly get laid to save their lives. And so you know, that's not going to be passed on to anybody because there's no woman, even in Idaho, fool enough to, you know, to hook up with one of those guys. And it was sort of great, actually, just to see five sad, pathetic, desperate, bigoted losers sort of walking downtown and having to demonstrate their futility to all.
Well, Mr. Mellett said he and his group have been discriminated against by the Eastern Oregon City. He said they have not ruled out John Day or Grant County completely, but they're having trouble finding a lawyer who will handle their discrimination case.
There you go. The really great thing, this is one of those sentences that sounds odd. The really great thing about the white supremacist compound in Medellin Falls, Washington, which is the biggest one in this area, is that I do believe it is now owned by a black woman. I believe that Morris, whose name
Day
escapes me.
Time.
Now, see, I know you were going to say Morris Day, and then I was going to, you beat me to it. Damn you! Morris, I'm going to say Morris Levy, but I think it's the guy from The Wire. The point is, the guy from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the lead counsel for the Southern Poverty Law Center, filed a lawsuit because some idiots, had killed a guy, and, it was a hate crime. And so he filed a lawsuit, and as part of the lawsuit, the guy's mom ended up owning their compound. So literally, like the county showed up with this elderly black woman, and they said, hey, white guys, she owns everything. Get out. And they just had to, like, pack up their crap and leave because she owns the whole joint. It's awesome.
That's nice.
All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
President Barack Obama met with top congressional Democrats and Republicans today. The president says they discussed small business jobs legislation, the need to fill judicial vacancies, energy reform, and the Afghanistan war funding bill.
What is the name of this cut? Let's see. This is funding.
I also urged the House leaders to pass the necessary funding to support our efforts in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Okay. I was going to ask you what we need funding for in Afghanistan, but I don't really know. Do you know we drop Pop-Tarts on Afghanistan?
I didn't know that.
That is a true thing. I learned that when I was researching Pop-Tarts for the Pop Culture Authority a few weeks ago. We said, is a single Pop-Tart still called a Pop-Tarts? And among the facts I learned is that we have dropped 4.1 million Pop-Tarts, because it's the taste of freedom, on Afghanistan, who undoubtedly treated it as some sort of god, as it descended from the heavens.
Really?
But We drop Pop-Tarts.
We just sent them Pop-Tarts.
And we drop them out in little parachutes, maybe.
It's like Operation Dumbo Drop, only with Pop-Tarts.
Exactly, but with a sort of a crisp icing coating.
What flavor Pop-Tarts?
I would imagine strawberry frosted, because that's the definitive Pop-Tart flavor. I don't know whether they all have like in little individual chutes that sort of carry them gently to earth, or if it's just a big crate that we just drop on a guy, which seems like it's going to have an equal chance of filling him or killing his family.
I mean, I can see why if you're sending them snack food, you might choose the Pop-Tart, because they're relatively indestructible, you know, when it comes to, like, heat and stuff.
Ah, but you don't want to microwave one. That's the one thing you don't want to do to a Pop-Tart. It'll catch on fire.
But they don't have microwaves, I don't think, in Afghanistan.
So. That's true. No, I guess that's a fair point.
Just have rocks and campfires from the footage I've seen.
It does. It really, I mean, if you were going to pick one food to embody America and you were going to give it to savages elsewhere to give them a little window into the greatness of our life, the Pop-Tart is exactly what I would send.
Either that or Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch. Here's the three things I would send. Pop-Tarts, Captain Crunch, or that that pizza that has got the cheese in the crust.
Oh, yeah.
I'd send
that
doesn't
really hold up well. You have to, like, eat that as soon as it's made.
Yeah, but they're probably eating dirt, I mean, is the thing. They're probably just eating clods
but
and their own
family.
They
won't appreciate the actual, you know, wonder of the cheese in the crust pizza.
I don't know.
They get it straight from the hut.
I like to think, it's a taste of America that is self-evident. Mm. All right. You don't really care about any of this, do you?
Not so much.
All right. Let's do one more here, and then we'll do our Mad Men wrap-up.
Well, since it seems to be a theme today, let's do our religious nutcase watch.
Here's your. Did we not already have it? Really? Do we have additional religious nutcasery?
We have
nutcasery?
Original nutcasery.
Really?
Additional, yes.
All right. Well, fair enough. Here's your religious nutcase watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Your religious nutcase watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
A Beaver Creek couple who left their infant daughter's fate to God rather than seek medical treatment for a mass that grew over her left eye will face charges of first-degree criminal mistreatment.
Awesome.
Prosecutors revealed Thursday during a custody hearing that a grand jury had indicted Timothy and Rebecca Weiland, members of Oregon City's Followers of Christ Church. The Weiland's 7-month-old daughter, Elena, was placed in state custody earlier this month after child welfare workers received a tip about the untreated and ballooning growth. Doctors said that the condition could cause permanent damage or loss of vision. The Weilands were indicted within the past few days and probably will be arraigned this week, said the deputy district attorney handling the custody case in juvenile court. Under Oregon law, it is a crime for parents to intentionally and knowingly withhold necessary and adequate medical attention from their children. The Weilands and their church reject medical care in faith for faith healing, anointing with oil, laying on of hands, prayer, and fasting. The parents testified at a juvenile court hearing last week that they never considered getting medical attention for Elena.
Well, because why would you?
Why would you?
She's got like a baseball made of skin on the front of her face, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, I've seen the, that's the photo that they,
You've seen the picture?
Oh, yeah. It's bad. I mean, it's a, seriously.
She's got like a softball size, she's a baby with a softball size growth on her forehead.
That's when the bad God was on duty. That's
the
good God was out of town, apparently.
It's actually a rare, it's rare to see a child her age with an advanced hemangioma, or however it's pronounced, because the condition typically is treated as soon as it's detected. But a pediatrician at Dornbecker said they never get this large. This was medical neglect.
So the parents have been charged. So the kid got taken away and is being treated, and then the parents are in a cell somewhere?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Yeah, so there you go. That's
faith healing.
Are they related to the are they related to the same nutcase family that got acquitted last year?
I think it's the same church.
I mean, it's hard to tell, and I'm not trying to traffic in stereotypes, but there does seem to be a small, closely knit, and so they're therefore one assumes intermarried group of people. I'm not saying actually inbred, not yet, but it does seem like that's a there's a finite pool of potential brides in that community. So all right, well there you go. So they'll get theirs, if not now, then someday. Things have a way of working out. There's your religious nutcase watch for Tuesday. God forbid one or both of them receives a horrific violation in prison and needs some sort of medical care.
Or somehow is punished with a giant growth over their eye.
Excellent. All right, there we go. And this is all true. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, so we'll do a little bit of Mad Men here, then we'll roll today's top five, then we'll have a little musical interlude, and we will pre-tape. Actually, I keep saying Rick Emerson, but we're going to pre-tape Legion of News as well.
Yeah.
We'll pre-tape Legion of News and Rick Emerson Show for Wednesday, because I got my Leverage taping that is going to be happening tomorrow. All right. Well, let's talk about Sunday's Mad Men, which was awesome.
Yes.
Which is awesome. It was, and I wondered about that show. I worried a little bit, because at the end of season three, there's a whole thing where they'd left and they'd started their own firm. They had Sterling Cooper Draper Price, I think is what they're calling it. So they were all going to be sacked, and so they bailed in the middle of the night and stole like client lists and office supplies or something, and then started their own company. And I was thinking, well, this is it. This is the there really is the jumping the shark risk now, because without the push pull dynamic, the tension of being at the firm, how's that even gonna play? But you know, I should have known better, because that really is just a minor part of the entire thing. Don Taylor, your thoughts.
No, it was terrific. There is so much there that I haven't really digested or analyzed. I know that our friend Peter Carlin has some very strong feelings about the season to season meaning of the different story arcs and what the basically where Don Draper's character is going and what he's going through,
right,
is reflective of
the times,
the time America as a whole at that time. All I know is I really enjoyed I enjoy seeing Betty look bad.
Oh, I just...
Because I have hated Betty since the beginning.
She is a universally disliked character.
And I don't think that she was supposed to be when this show started.
You know who doesn't despise her?
I think the writers... I think because the writers and the people she works with have to hate January Jones so much because she's...
They make her look awful all the time.
So marginally talented. And seems to be just kind of probably a very unpleasant person to begin with.
I saw an interview with her, and she seemed not... I won't say she seemed indistinguishable from Betty Draper, but she didn't seem all that bright. There didn't seem to be a lot going on there. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
And she's one of the absolute worst guests they've ever had on Saturday Night Live. Really showed that her talents do not lie in thinking at the spur of the moment. You know, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, you know, which is weird because you would figure... The thing that I never get about that is when, and it's not like it's confined to actresses. I mean, there are obviously actors who are hired to just be pretty faces as well, which is sort of puzzling because you figure the number of people who are trying to make it in that industry at any given moment, it seems like it's got to be possible to find somebody who is a pretty person who also can act. You know what I mean?
And they have a lot of them on that show. I think it's just they wanted a very specific kind of icy... Grace Kelly kind of a blonde, and they went with her, and I think her background is in modeling, not in acting. And so, but I really honestly thought that I didn't think that when the show began the first couple of seasons that she was supposed to be as hateful as we, the audience, were finding her, but they seem to have steered the show in that direction because they know that the audience just loathes her.
I remember, it's funny you say Peter Carlin, because Peter Carlin, at least the last time he and I discussed this, did not loathe her and actually accused me of not having a little bit of misogyny because I disliked her so much. And I just said it was because she was a useless load. That was really the reason I disliked her so much, is because, especially in contrast to Peggy, who is very, who seems to be, in a relative sense, striking her own path, making her own way. Whereas the problems of Betty Draper are just the problems of any number of spoiled, pampered people who think they have real problems because they don't really know what real problems feel like. And also she's just a whore. So,
We started seeing over the last season and now this particular episode that she's also moderately abusive to her children. She's extremely just self-involved, self-centered human being. It's nice to see that she's being treated
and let's just before somebody accuses me of having a double standard. Not that Don Draper, is like a good guy.
No.
The thing about it is, I will forgive it because there's complexity there. That's the other problem with Betty Draper is it's not even if you sort of take it as read that, well, that's an accurate portrayal of that kind of person and the whatever. It's just such a one note character. I mean, even if you assume that the character is meant to be written that way and that's how they're trying to convey it, somebody who's shallow, even if it's just a character who's shallow, it just gets tiring after a while. And there's no layering, there's no depth, there are no other facets to her.
What's really interesting to me is that if you do look at this as sort of a representation of America in a certain time period and these being archetypes of certain kinds of people, the most fascinating character to me, honestly, is their daughter, who is already having emotional problems. And I'm assuming, therefore, she is going to be like, she is the next generation. She is going to be, the teenage hippie, the feminist, the drug using, coke sniffing, rock music listening, messed up kid of the late 60s, early 70s.
Because what year is it now? It's 64. It's the end of 64. And that daughter's what, 10?
Something like that, yeah.
So Summer of Love, she'll be 15. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
She'll be a bit of a handful at that point. Yeah, especially because she's not going to have any parents at home to keep her tethered.
But also, though, that means that in a way she sort of is representative of that generation of like why so many of them turned out that way.
Right. Well, let's talk for a second about the best moment of that entire show for me. I mean, there were many, many moments. There was the great scene where Don, as much as guys like to think, and it's a fair point some of the time, that Don embodies so many of the classically stylish and gentlemanly behaviors of the era. You know, he's also just a dick a lot of the time. Like when he's talking to whoever the guy is that Betty's bonking, the senator's aide, whatever the guy's name is.
Yeah.
And he was just like a prick to the guy. You know, he said, "Well, this is only temporary. Believe me, everybody knows this is temporary," says Don, rather cattily, in response. But I really, and for less than just the obvious, more than just the prurient obvious reasons, I suppose, I really like the scene where he was getting cuffed by the hooker, where he's in bed with the hooker and then he's asking her to slap him, which really came out of nowhere. That's not a thing I expected, because the hooker thing only mildly surprised me that he actually was having a prostitute come to his house on Thanksgiving, because I thought, well, you know, Don is a very linear guy. You know, he's a binary type of guy, and this seems like the fastest way to solve a problem. Also, he's got money and whatever.
But then he just finished going on an unsatisfying date with basically another Betty.
Yeah.
Yet another Betty.
And so when they're in bed and the hooker's like on top of him or whatever, and she's taking up her bra and he says, you know, something, hold on a second. And then she says, don't tell me what to do. I know what you like. And I thought, well, that's odd that he let a hooker talk to him that way, because he seems like a guy who's very in control of his environment. They let anybody talk to him that way, but especially a hooker. And then it turns out that what Don likes is actually just to be slapped a lot during sex.
And that's a really predictable pathology if you think about it, because honestly, ostensibly...
he's so buttoned up.
People who enjoy being dominated in bed are often people who have to maintain control in every other aspect of their life. And that's one reason, you know, that appeals to them.
Is it wrong that actually while Don is in bed and he's got a half-naked hooker on top of him slapping him in the face, that my first thought was, I wonder what Don thinks about all this.
That's a little unnerving.
I wonder if Don...
That you're thinking about me at all while you're watching that.
It was only because my immediate thought was then...
What would Laura think of that?
Well, she was asleep. She wasn't... she wasn't around, baby. You gotta make do. Just because that seemed like a thing that I just sort of inherently knew, that you probably knew... You probably either knew a guy who liked to be slapped, or you knew a hooker who did slapping, or both. And tell me I'm wrong. I'm not wrong. You know I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong. I don't actually know any hookers. Let me say that.
But it seems like, you know, he's a guy who is so under control and buttoned up.
Yeah.
And also who has not a little bit of self-loathing. And so that seems like a guy who probably wants to be pummeled. It's like Sarah has that dominatrix friend, and one of her, and this is, I can say this because she cleared me to say this, but he's a, he works in finance, you know, rich, really in control, whatever. Comes over, and the first thing she does is like just put a dog collar on him, just makes him lick the floor for an hour.
That's very common, though. Women who work as dominatrixes, whatever the
name,
do say that a large majority of the men, particularly the higher priced dominatrixes, that rich, powerful men often like to be dominated privately.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of that scene just because, again, it shows an extra layer of...
Yeah.
Because it's like, how often can you spin, you know, you stir the same drink of him? Well, he's a man with a secret past. That is, you know, the obvious hook, but it's like that's just such a small part of
it. Plus, he's also a guy that is just filled with so much self-loathing over so many different things.
I did like the fact that at the end, they did this nice little twist where he is... telling the story of how the firm split off and became its own company to the Wall Street Journal guy. And that was just a little bit of writing genius there, because it is truth masquerading as a lie, masquerading as truth.
Yeah.
Because the idea is that he's going to spin a fiction for the guy because, you know, the truth was unsatisfying the first time around, but the fiction he's spinning is, in fact, the truth. And that's just it becomes a weird, like, funhouse mirror of his soul sort of a thing.
Well, also, he's realizing that, to a certain extent, he's going to have to market himself as a product in much the same way that he sells things, you know, that it's not going to that him being the quiet behind the scenes secret guy just isn't going to work anymore. But the only way he's going to be able to get along in this world, therefore, is to market himself, to create a brand identity.
That's right,
that
Don.
That is him.
I'd like to remind you that marketing and brand identity are important here in this world, especially here on the Rick Emerson radio program, which can be yours for just 32 cents a day. A program of such unrivaled and unparalleled genius that really you are committing venial, if not mortal, sin by not spreading the word to your friends, family, colleagues, loved ones, coworkers. Please spread the word of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You can do that by either proselytizing relentlessly in our behalf or, in fact, giving a gift subscription if you choose to do that for the low, low price of just 32 cents a day. That's right. I said just 32 cents a day. You can do that by going to rickemerson.com/gift. Also, speaking of marketing, this would be a good time to talk about why the Rick Emerson Show is available to you, the humble listener, for such an unbelievably low price. It's folks like Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about him at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. I've talked about how he's been a listener for a long time, and you know, not only has he been a listener of this show, he was a listener with the, you know, the whole business of the Tom Likas party and meeting Sarah there and whatever. And he's also really invested in Portland as a company because, you know, you gotta imagine if you're some guy running your own company, especially if you're a small company, you're just kind of starting from the ground up. You know, probably the temptation is just to open a catalog or go online and just buy some crap from from Trenton, New Jersey, and have it shipped to you. And, you know, that's how people do. But he actually goes the extra step of, whenever possible, getting his supplies, his equipment, any of the solutions he uses, when he does cleaning jobs, gets that from Portland businesses. So you think about this: the Cleaning Solution, in the person of Michael Beatty, is actually a Portland business. Getting his supplies and equipment from other Portland businesses and actually advertising on a third Portland business, which is just the Rick Emerson Radio Program. So right there, I mean, it kind of tells you what you need to know. They do regular maintenance programs too, which means it's not just like a one-time job where they come in and they squeegee off your floor and then they bail and you're kind of left to your own devices. When they come in, they clean your rug or tile or whatever, they'll actually maintain that going forward. So if it looks good, you know, it's going to stay looking good. It's not like it's a thing where you're going to have to come back and do the whole thing from scratch a year from now, and you have to pay out the nose for it. The maintenance program is actually very affordable. It's 40% of what the one-time job costs, to get a maintenance job done. So you get it done right, and he'll help you keep it looking clean. You get a hold of Michael Beatty at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. Please do tell me you heard it right here on the Emerson News Network.
Five, four, three, two, one, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
Did you have a pet named Bosco at some point?
No, but there was a, I believe there was a cartoon dog named Bosco back in the 30s.
All right.
Early out of the inkwell, or maybe he was a clown. I can't remember. He was a dog. There was a little dog named Bosco that was kind of a precursor to Mickey Mouse and that sort of thing in the out of the inkwell cartoons of the 30s.
And isn't Bosco also a chocolate syrup?
It was. When I was a child, it was a chocolate syrup that you would mix into milk and drink. I had a bank. It was a Bosco Bear bank. He had a little bear head and you'd It came with a plastic thing that you could screw onto your empty Bosco jar and use it as a bank.
Did you get that at the Five and Dime?
Yes. I got it down at the general store when my parents would take me into town on the wagon.
The new Sears and Roebuck came today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, why are we doing this top five? In other words, where did this idea come from? This is actually your notion, the top five live shows we've seen. This
was actually my husband's idea because I think he wants me to... talk about like how old I am or something, because he was like, you should talk about like some of the best shows you've seen. Rick would want to know about that.
John, you're ancient. You really ought to play up that fact more often.
Yeah. So, and I was like, but no, it sounded like an interesting idea that we could compare and contrast some of our favorite live shows that we've seen.
So what we'll do is we'll do this. We'll do my top five favorite live shows. And then on the Wednesday show, which I'm going to tape later on today, we will do Don Taylor's favorite live shows. So without further ado, these are the top five live shows as attended by me. Rick Emerson right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don Taylor.
Now, I am assuming that these are numbered appropriately, even though you went
It goes from
two,
the
four.
Bottom up. That's my fault. Okay. And I didn't put an honorable mention just because it's always a question of not what you put on, but what do you leave off? And yeah. I finally just decided just to cut the cord and only do five here.
Gotcha.
So, all right.
Number five, Quiet Riot.
That's right. I said Quiet Riot. God damn, I love Quiet Riot. Not kitscherly, not wackily, not zanily, not ironically.
I could see this being an enormous amount of fun.
Oh, man. It was unreal. Quiet Riot, this show that I'm talking about, this was the reason I got my first fake ID. For my friend Jason, he told me about it. Jason, by the way, who as his fake ID name, it was a pre-McLovin era. His name was actually Jack Daniel. Not Daniels. He lopped off the S. Jack Daniel. But I grew up as a huge Quiet Riot fan. I mean, and to this day, I really am. I mean, I've talked about this before, that I own 9 or 10 Quiet Riot albums. I mean, more than anyone. More than
most people need.
More than the band. You know, Mrs. Dubrow, Kevin Dubrow's mother, probably has never heard any of these. So when I first moved to Spokane, I was, 18 maybe. I guess I just turned 18. So a year later, I was 19. And they were playing at this terrible, just dirt hole of a club called Gatsby's. And I mean, a town like Spokane is no, but you shouldn't have anything called Gatsby in Portland. That's just retarded. That's a mismatch in every way. But it's a minuscule club that held like 70 people or something. And tonight, Quiet Riot. And I actually asked the guy. I like stopped by and I asked the guy at the door. I'm like, is that the Quiet Riot? As though there would somehow be two Quiet Riots, or like a Quiet Riot 2, or like a cover band of some kind. I mean, it was like 1990 or 91, so it's not like it was even retro at that point. It's not like there was not even any kitschy appreciation.
Because basically, the audience was so small that when he said, you know, "Are you ready to rock?" he could actually wait for each of you to answer individually.
We could fill it out. We could have a ballot and pass it forward. So I got my first fake ID to see Quiet Riot, and I will say this: playing a place that held 75 that night, probably 50 people, maybe, including one guy who was unbelievably drunk, sat right down front, and the place was so small and empty that it's like you could hear between songs, you could hear like the clinking of glasses and the waitress going, "Who had the ham special?" And so into the void, you would hear this drunk voice of one guy shouting out the name of their biggest hit over and over again. Or one of the big, he would just go, "Bang your head! Ooh!" all night. And of course, that's like the second to last song, and everybody knows that. I felt so bad for them, but I got to tell you, they played it like it was the Forum. I mean, they played it, they played, and I've seen a lot of shows since then, so it wasn't like it was just because I was young. They played their guts out. They really did. It was awesome. It was well done. To this day, one of the best small club shows I've ever seen. So there you go. Quiet Riot, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. The Quiet Riot.
Yes.
Wait, hold on. We got to let it just... Tonight. Not tomorrow.
Tonight.
Not last night.
Yeah,
tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. All right. These are my top five live shows. Dawn Taylor, this is never going to end, so we might as well. No. What's number?
Number four, Weird Al Yankovic.
From one extreme to the other. Have you ever seen Weird Al live?
No, and I've always wanted to.
Are you kidding me? He's coming in August. We're going. He's coming next month. We're going.
Okay.
We are going. That's it.
And I've always heard that his shows are huge fun, and I've always wanted to go, and I never have.
No, you and your husband, if you'd like. We're going to see Weird Al. He's coming to the State Fair in Salem, as he does every summer.
And who doesn't want to go to the State Fair?
You don't, and you don't want to go to Salem, but that's where they keep the weird.
You know, that's the reason that I haven't seen him since I moved up here to Oregon.
It's in Salem.
Because he's always, the only time he ever comes here is to play some State Fair.
Look, here's the thing. Sometimes Muhammad has to go to the mountain, sister. It's not like he's going to come here and serenade us. I mean, he might.
Like I should be. I saw Cheap Trick at Magic Mountain.
I've seen Weird Al 3 times, I think. I saw him once in Utah. And I've seen him twice here, I think. I've seen him 3 times, one way or the other. I got to tell you, talk about a guy. I saw him last year at the State Fair in Salem. And it sounds dumb, you know, when you say it's like at the Horticultural Center or, you know, one of the little like buildings there. But I mean, it's a big ass place. I mean, it's a gigantic building. It was a few thousand people and packed to the rafters like an hour before the show even started. And there's no opening band or anything. I mean, it's like he didn't drag us some opening act. It's just like video clips of Al TV and stuff. And the crowd was like, they were jammed in there a long time before the show started. The tickets were $25. Every ticket was $25. And it was like, you show up and you get your seat, general admission. For your $25, And it's like a live show. It's not like he's lip syncing. That's a live show with a real band, the same band he's had for like 25 years now, playing, you know, playing every instrument you hear in the song, no matter what they're parodying. Video clips between the songs, confetti, little low grade like pyro stuff happening in the background, light show. Multiple costume changes. I mean, myriad costume changes. So many that I lost track of them. He's doing the Saga Begins, which is the American Pie song. He gets the Cloud City Garrison up there. He's got the whole Stormtroopers. He's got a Vader. They're doing a choreographed dance routine. It's like you're $25. I have no idea how he makes any money on the show because it's just so unbelievably over the top. It is one of the... That is a guy who loves and respects his audience because you come away with with every penny of your $25 accounted for.
Actually, someone in the text box says that Weird Al is not at the State Fair this year. He's going to be playing.
Oh, he's at the Roseland.
And it's a week from today.
It's at the Roseland. Yeah, it's the first week of August. It's the Roseland. I'm on the trail of tickets, though. Don't
okay.
you worry.
Okay.
So we've been angling to get him on the show. We're talking to his people. I didn't want to say anything about it in case it doesn't come together.
Well, I knew we were talking to his people, but I, you know.
The Roseland, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gives you your money's worth, and then the money that you spent on three or four other less satisfying concerts, you get that money's worth, too. So there you go. Go see him. There's Weird Al. These are the top five live concerts as experienced by me, Rick Emerson.
Number three, Andrew W.K.
That's right. Let's see. Where's my... Andrew W.K., specifically the show at Dante's in, I think it would have been 2007, maybe. I don't even know how to describe this show. First of all, I love Andrew W.K. If I could just have every song on earth sound like this, doesn't matter what it is. You know, funeral march, wedding song, music box, they should all sound just like this. I've seen him three times as well, and this is a bold statement, but I will say, and anybody who saw Andrew W.K. during that first couple years where he was touring on I Get Wet and then The Wolf, It is the purest distillation of sort of exuberant rock joy that I have ever seen. And it was like that every show. And I thought maybe I just got him on a good night. And everybody I know who saw him on this tour said the same thing. They said they had never seen anything like it. The best example of that is that, you know, it's an unspoken rule that you don't get on stage. And if you do, you don't touch anything, you don't screw with anything. And you're up there for like 5 seconds before security comes and thumps you and kicks you out.
Yeah.
All throughout the show, and in increasing numbers, kids would just jump up on stage, and it was mostly under 20s. I was one of the older people there. Kids would just jump up on stage, and he would just immediately go over and put his arm around them, and then they would just begin, like, synchro headbanging while he sang. And then he would do this great thing where he would just hand them the microphone, and he would go over and start just wailing on the piano, and the kid would just take over and just belt out part of the song. And then the kid would do the most amazing thing. The kid would just hand him the microphone back and shake his hand and then dive off. Because it was just understood, like, everybody was cool about it. At one point, one of the security guys early on came out and tried to grab one of the kids, and WK was just like, he's like, no, 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 and he, like, shooed the security guy off stage. And it didn't look like it was a choreographed thing. It was like the guy was figuring he'd go kick the kid off, and they stopped him. And so more and more kids would just jump up on stage and grab the mic and sing, and he would be like, all right, whatever, and then he'd just go play piano, and then he'd come back. By the end of the show, which is when they sing Party Hard, there were probably 40 kids on stage, all of them gathered around the microphones, just screaming the chorus. Andrew W.K., his three guitar players, bass player, and his other keyboard player are all huddled around one microphone in the corner of the stage, trying not to fall off onto the floor, all singing into one mic at the same time as they're trying to do the chorus, and it's just devolved into complete and utter chaos. I mean, it was just awesome. And then the song ended, and he went like, good night! And then he stayed outside, I was told, for 3.5 hours signing autographs, at one point dispatching a kid to a Plaid Pantry to buy him more markers. It was just the best thing. The best Andrew W.K. story is when he played Wembley, and then he was signing autographs outside of Wembley. Wembley finally kicked him out at 3 a.m., and he led a parade to the house of a fan who lived nearby, where he sat in the guy's kitchen until dawn, signing autographs for people.
Wow.
Anyway, there you go. It was awesome. It was awesome. I mean this in the best way. He should have died in a plane crash right after that, because there's no way to top it. These are the top five live shows that I have seen. Don Taylor?
Number two, Roger Klein.
Roger Klein of Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. hard to pick a best show for him. I would say November, I think of November of 08, because it's the one that Lara didn't get to go to because she was, this is when she was traveling in the Amazon. And it was just sort of a Roger Klein-esque thing to, that's a reason to miss a show. I saw him at Barbati's. I don't know. There's not much you can say about Roger Klein if you haven't seen him, which is such a cliche, but it's just one of those things. He was in this band called The Refreshments in the 90s, and I didn't even know the Peacemakers existed. It's essentially the same band in many ways. But a guy was like, no, that guy's still around. He has this new band, The Refreshments, this new band, The Peacemakers. In fact, they're going to be here tonight. And so Lara and I were big Refreshments fans, and we just walked into... he was actually at Bravati's the first time we saw him. We walked in to see him, and it was just one of those things where it was like, we had no idea that he had been out there on the road this whole time since the 90s with this band. But this show at Bravati's was just, it really is one of those things where he doesn't sell many records. He doesn't have hit singles. It's not like he has videos. Nobody uses his songs in commercials. But you go to his show, and like Jimmy Buffett or any one of those guys, I mean, I hate to make that comparison, but it's like one of those guys, everybody there knows every word to every song, and they see him every time he comes to town. He does this thing in Mexico once a year, I guess twice a year, where he and his whole band just stay at a hotel for like 3 days, and they play every night, like near the beach or whatever, in Mexico. And you go down and you just like drink with him in the bar all day, and then he plays all night for like 5 hours, and then everybody passes out, and they do it again the next day for 3 days in a row. And it's... it really is just, it's just an amazing show. If you've never seen Roger Klein, in fact, when he comes to town, I always say, and I'll do it again the next time he comes here, I always say that if you go and you don't like it, the first three people who go to a Roger Klein show don't have a good time, I will pay you whatever you paid for the ticket. I will refund your ticket price. I'll do that myself. That's how sure I am that you will love it. There you go. Greatest live shows I have seen. Don Taylor, what might number one be?
Shockingly, it's Kiss.
This is this is Kiss the reunion tour in 1996. Whatever, and these are all, I mean, of the many, many, many shows I've seen, these are the best five, you know, so a lot of superlatives used. I will say that while of the other shows I'll stand out in some specific way, you know, exuberance or a sense of, you know, discovering something new or value for your money, whatever. Hands down. The single most magical moment of my concert-going life thus far, and probably forever, I mean, I can't imagine what whatever time, would be the 96 reunion tour. Because it's different for me in the sense that I'm young enough to have never seen them back in the day, back in the 70s. But grew up, old enough that I grew up with sort of the myth and the legend, and Kiss really is, you know, they really are equal parts myth and reality and icon and band. And, I'll just say that when we walked in, the first thing you do is you walk by these huge inflatable figures of Kiss that are like 300 feet tall. So you're already primed to see them as, you know, more gods than men. And it was the most amazing experience walking to the Delta Center in Salt Lake. And it was like you were going to some sort of... It was like you were at the end of Close Encounters and you're streaming towards Devil's Tower. Because there are people from 5 years old to 50 years old, all of us walking from different directions, converging in the Delta Center, and probably 75% of us dressed as a member of KISS. You know, and again, children who you know never saw them, teenagers who've only heard about them, me who maybe kind of remembered them but never saw them, and then old guys who saw them back then. All of us looking the same, walking through this one shared experience. And then you walk in and they do this amazing thing with the house music where the final song they play is Won't Get Fooled Again. And it gets louder and louder and louder. And then at the final scream, the house lights go out. But then nothing happens. The song just continues to play. And then the house music ends. And then there's just this low drone that goes on for like 5 minutes of like a... just sort of rumbling the rafters. And it was like, I felt like I was about to have a nervous breakdown. I was so excited. And then and then you grow up listening to this album. You grow up listening to the Kiss Alive album, which is their breakthrough record. And you grew up hearing that, you know, you wanted the best, you got the best open, which you've heard 1,000 times. The only comparison I can make, the only comparison to hearing the guy in the stadium when I'm there say that you wanted the best, you got the best, the hottest band in the land, Kiss, which is their stock open, is being in the Phantom Menace Theater I mean, it really was. It was a musical equivalent to seeing The Phantom Menace, where the lights go down and then you see that a long time ago in a galaxy far. I get chills actually just thinking about that. You see that on the screen. Because though that sentence, that introduction, is so linked with a shared collective, it's a cultural experience. And then the curtain drops, and they, you know, the planes on the curtain drops, and you see this, you know, this sort of entity that you only know about from visual representation, from iconography, and from stories. And it really took me the better part of half an hour to get my brain around the fact that I was actually seeing Kiss as I had always imagined them playing in front of me. And it's hard to imagine that now, 14 years after the reunion. But it was just like it's hard to remember what it was like to see Phantom Menace with that expectation. But it was just, it was astounding. It was really just, I should have just taken my own life that night. Because it's all been downhill from there. All right. There you go. All right, so that's it. We're done. We have a little musical interlude here. A little while, we're going to, I'll put up a Twitter announcement about this. I don't feel like you have to, you know, just, you won't miss it. I'll send out a Twitter announcement that we're going to pre-tape some stuff for tomorrow because I got my leverage taping coming up and so forth. So in the meantime, we thank you for listening. Thank you for being out there. The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you today and every day by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for being out there. We come to you live each and every day from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor. Advanced Technology and Magic, courtesy of Thomas Gill. Executive Producer, Bruce Agler. And, of course, our Chief of Staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget, the live stream continues next, and we'll be back to pre-tape some stuff here in just a skosh. It is Tuesday, July 27th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thank you all for listening. See you in just a bit. Bye now. Watch out for snakes.
That's why we was like, stop, stop, you're spraying the babies, you're spraying the babies. They didn't even care.